I'm gonna ride around in style. I'm gonna drive everybody wild, 'cause I'll have the only.
There's a man in the funny papers we all know. He lives way back a long time ago. He don't eat nothing but a bearcat stew. Well, this cat's name is Alley-Oo. He got a chauffeur that's a genuine dinosaur. And he can knuckle your head before you count too far. He got a big ugly club and a head full of how. Like great big lions and grizzly bears.
We finally had our episode, so now you've got your voice. But does it kind of make you think the nation on the brink? Does the trouble you the W is playing hide and seek? What were you doing down south? Were you just hanging out?
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Although 11 states voted to reject gay marriage on Tuesday, Ohio's amendment was the most extreme. The Ohio measure not only defines marriage as between a man and a woman, it also bans civil unions and denies any legal status to all unmarried couples and prohibits two unmarried people from jointly adopting a child. Private companies based in Ohio have already expressed concern that the measure will prevent them from offering domestic partner benefits, thereby making it harder for them to attract top-notch employees.
Not only did Bush win, but so did Walmart. California voters rejected a measure that would have required employers of 50 or more to provide health care to their employees. A recent study released by UC Berkeley showed that Walmart employees without health insurance were costing state taxpayers $86 million a year. The residents of Arizona also decided to make it a misdemeanor for state employees to fail to report violations of immigration law. Florida and Nevada voters passed referendums to raise their state's minimum wage to $6.15 per hour.
Thousands of Nigerians took to the streets in Lagos on Wednesday to support an upcoming general strike against fuel price hikes. Adams Osiomhole, president of the Nigeria Labor Congress, addressed the throng of supporters, saying that on November 16th, the people are going to begin the fight against poverty, unemployment, and dictatorship. The union is calling for a complete shutdown in the production of the fifth biggest source of oil for the United States. At the rally, Joseph Eva, a leader of a group that represents the Ijaw tribe in the Niger Delta, threatened that any oil worker seen at a flow station would be attacked or kidnapped. The union also announced its intention to specifically target the Royal Dutch and Shell group.
Labor contract negotiations resumed today between auto manufacturer Volkswagen in Germany and its workers' union there. After a series of one-hour warning strikes protesting Volkswagen's calls for a wage freeze, the German metalworkers' union, IG Metall, finally agreed to a 28-month pay freeze in exchange for a $1,200 cash bonus and a guarantee that there would be no layoffs until 2011. Germany's biggest industrial union represents more than 100,000 employees at Volkswagen's Western German plants. The auto manufacturer plans to cut German labor costs by $2.6 billion over the next 6 years. Here's today's Dow Bob report. The U.S. Commerce Department released the first economic indicator after the election, reporting back-to-back declines in orders placed with U.S. factories, despite economists' prediction of an increase. Orders fell by 0.3% in August and 0.4% in September. That's over $1 billion per month. However, orders for computers and electronic equipment did increase, thanks to the U.S. military's ongoing occupation of Iraq and its demand for communications equipment.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
At last, the golden age of television is upon us. But alas, this is not the golden age of TV quality, but literally the age of TV gold, when advertisers have become the programming. Leading the way is Disney's ABC television network, which has now opened its expanse of our public airwaves to complete domination by sponsors. I don't mean just the ads that sponsors run on its shows, or even the not-so-subtle placement of sponsors' products in the shows, but rather sponsors that become the featured character of the show. Sears has stepped out as the first of ABC's new advertising stars, putting itself forward as the centerpiece of the network's latest reality show called Extreme Makeover: Home Edition. Not that Sears has any actual dramatic talent, but it does have more than $1 million that it paid to ABC to write the corporation into the script of this 6-part series portraying stories of home renovation. The actual actors will be using Sears tools in their work, adding Sears appliances to the renovated homes and decorating with Sears furniture. If that's too subtle for viewers, there'll also be Sears trucks delivering merchandise. Branded workers from Sears Home Improvement Centers will occasionally arrive on the scene, and the show's cast will make trips to Sears for supplies. The commercially crass rationale for this all-Sears show is that advertisers need a way to outfox you TV viewers who are using your clickers to zap past those annoying commercial breaks. So forget the ads. The sponsors will be the shows. To fabricate this great leap forward, ABC even has a senior vice president for integrated marketing and promotion. He assures us that while, quote, Sears plays a role in the personality of the show, ABC would never take it to the point where it would seem like a bunch of logos slapped in a show. This is Jim Hightower saying, see, there still are a few artistic standards in television.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, cable radio network, archives at whiterosesociety.org, and tomhartman.com. Our chat room is back up today. Yesterday, an odd day. Radio Power was down, and our chat room was down. I believe Radio Power is back up, and I know our chat room is because it's already full of folks. So you go to tomhartman.com, you can drop in there. Our quote for the day from Dr. Martin Luther King: we must accept finite disappointment, but we must never give up infinite hope. I mean, this is marvelous. There's another one, actually, I think that is particularly relevant, particularly given some of the things I want to talk about today. Franklin Roosevelt said, let us never forget that government is ourselves and not an alien power over us. The ultimate rulers of our democracy are not a president and senators and congressmen and government officials, but the voters of this country.
And now some would say, well, but maybe they're the companies who own the voting machines, ultimately. We'll get to some discussion of that. But this is a done deal. It's not going to change. It's not going to go away. We really need to move to acceptance. And what do we do now? And of course, what are the issues before us? What are the very real issues, the moral issues that are facing America? By the way, and we'll be talking about those as we go along. And I have to say the battle for the heart and soul of the Republican Party has already begun. I mean, the absolute well, again, this is something more probably in the second hour, given the stack that I've got that I want to get through to. Already, you've got the Christian conservatives and the Christian moderates arguing over, how much religion should be inserted into the government and which religion. This, of course, being the same battle that was being fought just before Thomas Jefferson assumed the presidency, when he basically threw them all out and said, sorry, it's a secular government here in the United States. And largely has been ever since. You've got the corporations, of course, lining up saying, we gave you the money, we made this happen, you're going to make it, do it our way. You've got all the various fringe groups and morality groups, the homophobes and the gun advocates and the gun manufacturers, largely, frankly, the gun manufacturers. And the weapons industries, and Arlen Specter, who in all probability is going to be the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, noting today that if George Bush tries to send him, Arlen Specter, the Republican from Pennsylvania, the moderate Republican from Pennsylvania, that if George Bush tries to send him an ideologue for the Supreme Court, somebody who specifically has the agenda of overturning Roe v. Wade, that Arlen Specter, the Republican, is not going to let it happen. So, the cracks are already appearing. The power and all that sort of thing, terrible stuff. Terrible stuff. Is the goal of both Osama bin Laden and the Bush administration to bankrupt this nation? I want to get into that during the program today. Is the Republican Party ready for the rapture? Are they about to experience it? And I want to talk to you about the ultimate felony against democracy, which in my opinion is privatizing our vote. But a few good things happen on Tuesday. On Tuesday in Florida, for example, overwhelmingly, Floridians voted to raise the minimum wage by a dollar an hour from $5.15 to $6.15. Here in Vermont, I believe it's $7 or $7.50 an hour. I'm not sure which. Various states have minimum wages, but the cons, of course, the conservatives have fought vigorously to keep it at $5.15 an hour, the lowest when you include inflation, that it has ever been, far lower than when it was first instituted. The idea originally being that if you play by the rules, and if you work hard, you should be able to raise your family in America. See, this, in my opinion, is just core morality stuff. If you play by the rules and you work hard, you should be able to put your kids through school. You should be able to pay for their education, or pay for the costs associated with their education. The right, decent clothes to get to school, school books, paper, pencils, whatever, meals, transportation. You should be able to pay for your medical expenses. You shouldn't die because you're poor. You should certainly be able to pay for housing and food, the necessities of life. And you should even be able to pay for a decent retirement. Not a terrified homeless retirement, but a decent retirement. And that's been an ideal in America pretty much through all of the United States. I mean, this was from the founding of this country up until the Gilded Age, up until the 1870s. This was something that the founders held very strongly. And of course, the way that they instituted it was by the family farm. The family farm was the backbone of America until the beginning of the industrialization of the United States in the 1860s, 1870s. And then we went through this funny little period of about 40, 50 years where America began to resemble Victorian-era England both the Democratic and Republican parties became horribly corrupted by corporate money and wealth. The rich got richer and richer and richer. The poor fell off the edge of the earth. The middle class vanished. The farmers were driven off the farms because these large corporate agricultural combines rose up and colluded with the railroads to essentially make it impossible for small family farmers to compete against, you know, the growing and large agricultural combines. This led to family farmers banding together and forming a union. It's called the Grange Movement, or something similar to a union, a movement, in the 1870s, 1880s, and led to the populist movement of the 1880s, 1890s, 1900, 1910, which led to women's suffrage, the right of women to vote, in 1920, and led to the direct election of the Senate. Senators used to be appointed by the states. Again, the process had become so corrupted when we lost our middle class during that period from 1870 through 1920, more or less, 1930, had become so corrupted that we the people said, enough, no more. And the populist movement rose up and said, that's it. But Teddy Roosevelt, in 1907, was probably the leading advocate. He was the one who introduced the leading advocate for a middle class. He was the one who introduced the phrase living wage into our lexicon. And just clearly came right out and said that he was in favor of a living wage. The square deal, the living wage, that a person should be able, if they work hard and play by the rules, they should be able to live a decent life in America. And, of course, it wasn't until after the collapse in 1929 and Franklin Roosevelt coming to power, we had a really, truly strong liberal Democratic president who believed in the historic liberal values that have made this country so strong. Things like the liberal idea that we collectively should make sure that our food supply is safe and have a food and drug administration and our drugs are safe. That we, the people, should have a communications infrastructure. You'll remember it was an electricity infrastructure. It was the liberal Franklin Roosevelt who forced the electric companies to provide electricity to rural areas. The electric companies didn't want to because it was not profitable. Partly it was government-funded, the Rural Electrification Administration, the REA, and partly he forced it on them. Same thing with telephones. And he said, you want to have a telephone company, you're going to have to serve those folks out there. And so, the liberal idea of Social Security, the liberal idea of the right of people to organize, of the right of labor to organize, the liberal idea of a national park service and national park systems where we hold in trust the great commons, the liberal idea of health care for those who can't afford to provide their own health care, Medicare, Medicaid, the liberal idea of providing protections for those who are in the minority, those whose skin may be a different color or who are of a different religion or who are handicapped. Every one of these ideas was fought aggressively and vigorously by conservatives. But they have prevailed. And, the future of them now is on the line. It's very much on the line. But anyhow, Floridians moving in this direction gave workers a boost. Minimum wage now in Florida is $6.15 an hour. And this is a marvelous thing. Also, Californians voted to fund stem cell research in California. They're actually going to go in debt, $3 billion. They're selling bonds to provide for stem cell research there. So pretty remarkable stuff. I've heard a couple of people in various areas and various arenas talk about how the kids didn't turn out. And again, I'm in my mind, it's still not clear whether George W. Bush won or whether whether Diebold won. But we have what we have, as I said, and we have to move on from there. But in any case, I just wanted to set that myth straight. The young people did turn out. 4.6 million more young people cast votes this year than in 2000. That's huge. That's almost a 10% increase in the youth vote. Just to put it into perspective, in 1996, the youth vote being people between 18 and 29. Right? It's funny. When I was 29, I didn't think that was youth, but it's 18 to 29. In 1996, only 34% of those people showed up to vote. In 2000, 4 years ago, only 42% of those folks showed up to vote. This time, 51.6% of the youth of America showed up to vote. So there was a substantial appearance of youth in the vote this year. So, you know, stop picking on them. In fact, in 1996, they represented 17.1% of the total electorate. It actually dropped down to 16.6% in the 2000 vote. This year, it was 18.4% of all votes cast were cast by the young people between the ages of 18 and 29. 51.6% of all citizens ages 18 through 29 actually showed up and voted. That's huge. Got an email from one of our listeners in Grand Rapids. He says, first I have to start out by thanking you for talking about these issues of what we can do about the future. I want to share a little bit of this with you. Actually, in our phone lines have been lighting up. I wanted to get some of these points out. In fact, there's a bunch of things that I want to not miss today. But I know many of you want to call and still want to talk about what happened on Tuesday and process that. So we'll also open up the phone lines, 1-866-889-8894. Tom Hartman with you, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Working hard to make a living, bring shelter from the rain. A father's son left to carry on blue denim.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. I just, you know, I want to thank Matt for this this kind email. He said, after listening to the first 15 minutes of your show about the future of this country, the passion I had came back, and I became as fired up as ever. Using a few of your points, I wrote a speech that I gave to my college's Democratic group and was able to lift the spirits of those who felt the same kind of despondency I had been feeling. And then he goes on to talk about this. We can't let this get us down. I mean, this country has been through hell and back. We had a president once, John Adams, who actually passed a law that allowed him to put into prison newspaper editors, including the grandson of Benjamin Franklin, Benjamin Franklin Bach, who dared to criticize him. We have been through a civil war that literally tore us apart and had brothers killing brothers. We have been through several world wars. We have been through being lied into wars in Vietnam. We've been lied into another one here in Iraq. We've been through it all, and every single time we have emerged, and democracy, in my opinion, is stronger now. You say, how can you say that? Look at what's going on in the White. No, I believe that democracy is stronger now than it ever has been. Not as a result of this election. But I think that in a bizarre sort of way, this election is going to be a very good thing for the progressive movement, because it is bringing people together. It is galvanizing people. And George Bush now doesn't have Bill Clinton to blame. He doesn't have 9/11 to blame. He doesn't have anybody to blame except himself as his messes unravel. The debt ceiling now, we've got that coming up. I mean, there's just a zillion of these things. And it is opening. It's creating an opening, in my opinion, for a discussion of the true values on which this country was founded. The values of fairness, values of honesty, values of cooperation, the idea that a chain is only as strong as its weakest link, values that have been abandoned by conservatives and have been held by liberals since George Washington first said back in 1772, as mankind becomes more liberal, they will be more apt to allow those who have conducted themselves as worthy members of the community are equally entitled to the protections of civil government. I hope ever to see America among the foremost nations of justice and liberality. Let's go to the phone lines. Bob in California is on the line. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind?
Well, hey, I'm very pleased to hear you work in this line of reasoning. I've been following the blogs a lot and watching a big, huge battle erupt between people who think that, no, we've got to march left, or to hell with the red states, let's not do anything for them. I really think that if we, the Democrats and the progressives and independents, let the country get split into either we must go to the right or go to the left, I think we're doing ourselves a huge disservice.
Not only are we shooting ourselves in the foot, number one, but number two, we're doing it based on a myth. There are no red states. I mean, in every red state, you've got somewhere between 25 and 49.9% of the population who think the way you and I do.
But also, I mean, and also, you mentioned the Rural Electrification Administration. I work for one of those co-ops. The big PG&Es of the world didn't come here. We have our own utilities. It's hilarious, though, that for this great progressive roots all throughout America, there's telephone co-ops, there's electric co-ops. They're actually tend to be the red counties because they've kind of forgotten. They got themselves stuck sideways on the environment and on the peace movement, affirmative action, things that really drive them crazy.
Yeah.
I really think that we've got a chance to reach out. Our county voted for...
Where is your county? Where in California are you located, Bob?
Plumas County.
And where is that?
North of Tahoe. It's kind of the unknown northeast part of the state.
Okay. We got about 10 seconds, by the way. I'm sorry.
Okay. Voted for Bush. The same breath, they support wind power, and they tossed a developer out in his ear.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
supervisor.
See, there is a lot of good news in this, and that's what we need to focus on. That's the work we need to be doing. And, Bob, thanks. You said it so articulately and so well. I do appreciate that. Anybody who thinks that we should, you know, throw over the side of the boat, anybody who's in a red state, or for that matter, anybody who thinks that they're a Republican or conservative, you know, these poor brainwashed individuals, you know, other than the billionaires who legitimately, you know, I suppose have some reason for that affiliation, we need to embrace them. 29 minutes past the hour.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Talk about unsanitary. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums or wear a dust mask. Imagine vacuuming your house wearing a dust mask? Friends, try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Orrick XL free for 30 days. It's 99.99% dust-free. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Although 11 states voted to reject gay marriage on Tuesday, Ohio's amendment was the most extreme. The Ohio measure not only defines marriage as between a man and a woman, it also bans civil unions and denies any legal status to all unmarried couples and prohibits two unmarried people from jointly adopting a child. Private companies based in Ohio have already expressed concern that the measure will prevent them from offering domestic partner benefits, thereby making it harder for them to attract top-notch employees.
Not only did Bush win, but so did Walmart. California voters rejected a measure that would have required employers of 50 or more to provide health care to their employees. A recent study released by UC Berkeley showed that Walmart employees without health insurance were costing state taxpayers $86 million a year. The residents of Arizona also decided to make it a misdemeanor for state employees to fail to report violations of immigration law. Florida and Nevada voters passed referendums to raise their state's minimum wage to $6.15 per hour.
Thousands of Nigerians took to the streets in Lagos on Wednesday to support an upcoming general strike against fuel price hikes. Adams Oshiomhole, president of the Nigeria Labor Congress, addressed the throng of supporters, saying that on November 16th, the people are going to begin the fight against poverty, unemployment, and dictatorship. The union is calling for a complete shutdown in the production of the fifth biggest source of oil for the United States. At the rally, Joseph Eva, a leader of a group that represents the Idra tribe in the Niger Delta, threatened that any oil worker seen at a flow station would be attacked or kidnapped. The union also announced its intention to specifically target the Royal Dutch and Shell group.
Labor contract negotiations resumed today between auto manufacturer Volkswagen in Germany and its workers' union there. After a series of one-hour warning strikes protesting Volkswagen's calls for a wage freeze, the German metalworkers' union, IG Metall, finally agreed to a 28-month pay freeze in exchange for a $1,200 cash bonus and a guarantee that there would be no layoffs until 2011. Germany's biggest industrial union represents more than 100,000 employees at Volkswagen's Western German plants. The auto manufacturer plans to cut German labor costs by $2.6 billion over the next 6 years. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The U.S. Commerce Department released the first economic indicator after the election, reporting back-to-back declines in orders placed with U.S. factories, despite economists' prediction of an increase. Orders fell by 0.3% in August and 0.4% in September. That's over $1 billion per month. However, orders for computers and electronic equipment did increase, thanks to the U.S. military's ongoing occupation of Iraq and its demand for communications equipment.
Thank you.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back.
You can get it if you really want.
Yeah, we've got to make some effort here. We got to start changing the conversation here in America. Waking folks up. Keep the discussion going. Keep the discussion going. There is so much. There is so much potential in this nation. And this country is so resilient. Yes, it looks like Bush has created a train wreck for us. He's, you know, driving the country off the edge of a cliff. Now Congress is going to have to come back in special session in November this month to raise the debt ceiling so he can borrow some more money from our grandchildren to try and make the economy look good so that he could get himself elected or try to get himself elected. But you know, nonetheless, we are a resilient people. We really and truly are. And we need to get through the five stages of grief to acceptance and then to use a little bit of righteous anger and motivation and move forward and start putting together a very clear and specific agenda. We need to learn the lesson that the conservatives learned in 1964 when Barry Goldwater went down in flames. Although, you know, he really went down in flames. I think he only got like 36% of the vote. Whereas this was a squeaker. How Bush can call this a mandate? I don't get it. 1-866-889-8894. Let's take a few phone calls here. Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico, on the line. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Yeah, I'm getting pretty close to acceptance here. I'm processing fast, and it reminds me that my background's biology. And it reminds me of like Ebola virus. I think that the thing that these guys, these cons, are forgetting. That if something is too virulent, it kills its host.
Right. The point that Chuck is making, the Ebola virus is relatively self-limiting. It very rarely goes beyond one particular village. And the reason why is because it kills people so quickly that they don't have a chance to transmit it to other people.
Right.
And so usually the only people who get it are either people in their immediate family or people in the hospital who get sprayed with their blood as they're melting down. But that's it.
Yep.
And there is a tuberculosis aspect to this, to use the biology analogy, and that is back in the after the Goldwater defeat in the late 60s, early 70s, Joe Coors and a bunch of other wealthy right wingers got together and funded the Heritage Foundation and many other right wing think tanks, and have spent literally billions of dollars to cause a collective amnesia in America, to rewrite history, and to cause us to think. That what's good for the rich is good for everyone, and unfortunately, it wouldn't be nice if that was true, but unfortunately, we are not a kingdom. We are not an aristocracy. Aristocracy does not produce a middle class. It doesn't happen.
You're absolutely right, Tom. I guess my point in trying to make a positive thought about this is the concept that the neocons. Are killing their own economy.
Yeah, well, that's the battle that's erupting in the Republican Party now is between the neocons, the conservatives, and the moderates. And moderate conservatives, moderate Republicans. And, the Lincoln Chafees and Arlen Specters of the Republican Party, versus the real conservatives, for example, John McCain, versus the... we'll lie if that's what it takes. We will deceive. We will steal. We'll do anything in order to get power. Folks like Bill Frist versus the neocons like Dick Cheney. I mean, there's all these factions within the Republican Party now.
Yeah, Tom. I guess that's actually my next question. Is like I was stunned that Arlen Specter would come out so close and say, "Don't send us to the Senate." People that are just so right wing that we're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah, I see this as the early cracks, the early cracks, and it's the Republicans are drinking their champagne. The billionaires for Bush are having a good old time, but
Well, we're just getting started.
There you go. There you go, Chuck. Well said. Thank you for the call. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Jim in Laredo, Texas is called 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Jim, welcome to the show.
Well, good morning, Tom.
Hey, Jim, haven't heard from you in a while.
Oh, I'm still out here listening to you, Tom.
Great, great. On Sirius Satellite.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I only way I stay grounded to reality. I was listening to Mike Malloy last night, and I would urge your listeners to go to White Rose and download the first hour of Mike Malloy. You want something to scare you to death? This is all about the four basic voting machines that was used in this election.
Yeah.
Basically being owned and controlled by the same group of people that controls Diebold.
Yeah, I know.
And the theocracy of what they're trying to put in theocracy and reconstruction and dominionism into this country by throwing these elections.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I didn't hear Mike's show, but I can, you know, I've written on this topic extensively, and ESNS, the company that Chuck Hagel was the CEO of when he left to run for office. ESNS was originally funded in its the three companies' earlier incarnation by a family in Nebraska who are members of this this movement that believes that the Constitution should be replaced by the Bible. But the current corporation has nothing to do with them, and I think it is possible for us to take paranoia to over the edge, I have a piece I submitted to Common Dreams today about this whole issue, you know, about the electronic voting machines and was the election stolen. And I talked about it some yesterday. In fact, in the second and third hour, I think I talked about it more. So maybe you didn't hear it, Jim. I think it's a real issue, a real serious issue. But I don't think we're doomed. We need to fix this thing. We need to wake up and come back. And the biggest, frankly, with regard, and Jim, I know you just dropped off. I appreciate the call. Your cell phone must have gotten out of range. But I got to say the thing that I think is most important is that we should not be fighting the battle on the grounds that you were just talking about. Voting machine companies have evil people running them, therefore they're ripping us off and stealing our democracy. That's not the ground to fight the battle on. Because if you fight the ground on that battle, then somebody's going to come along and say, well, let's put the voting machine companies in the hands of an ethical corporation. Let's put them in the hands of AOL Time Warner or General Electric, you know, or some company that you and I may still think is an insidious force, but most Americans trust. Let's put the voting machines in the hands of the New York Times Corporation or something. And my point is that the ultimate felony against democracy, the ultimate crime against democracy, is not the fact that the voting machines are owned by companies like, you know, Diebold, where good old Wally is the head of the Republican Committee in Ohio, or ESNS that was started by the Amundsen family, you know, three iterations earlier, and they believe that the Bible should replace the Constitution. That's not, in my opinion, that's not the ultimate felony. The ultimate felony is that we are allowing any private corporation to handle our vote. Our vote is the heartbeat of our commons. I mean, Thomas Paine made this point. He said, if you take away a man's vote, you reduce him to tyranny. You have reduced the nation to tyranny. The vote is the franchise by which all other franchises are created. The vote is the commons, that part of the government, that part of we the people, the collective commons, that allows us to assert our will through our elected representatives about the whole rest of the commons, about things like, you know, the environment, about the civil rights, you name it. The only way it gets done, the only way the voice goes from we the people into local, state, and national government, and then into law, is through the vote. And frankly, in my mind, the issue is not the horrors of the companies that are running the voting machines. Although that's an interesting sideshow, but the real issue is, what the hell are voting machines, are any companies, are any corporations whatsoever doing handling our vote? A corporation which is only answerable to its board of directors, only answerable to the profit motive, only answerable to its CEOs, handling our vote? When the vote is the most essential of the commons of our governmental functions, it's wrong. It doesn't happen in any other country on the earth, and to the best of my knowledge, and it should not happen here. Canada experimented in one province with voting machines, and last year they kicked them out. They said, we're going back to paper. Now, if we are going to have a love affair in the United States with machinery, as you know, we started in the 1964 was the first election to have mechanical voting machines. If we're going to have a love affair with technology, and we're going to insist on having voting machines, then let's have them owned by the government, programmed by government, full-time government employees, maintained by government employees, take them off the internet and transport, you know, the cards that carry the votes physically, and have every single machine print a paper ballot. You know, I'd be willing to accept that, because then again, the vote is in the hands. You know, we're using technology to vote rather than paper, but then the vote again is in the hands of we the people. The crime here is not that you know, you've got corporations selling voting machines that are owned by Saudi sheikhs or that believe in the Bible. That's a terrible thing, but that's not the big crime. The big crime is that any corporation at all is allowed to control our voting, to have any hand at all in our voting. And as soon as we start the argument that, oh, it's just these terrible people, these terrible companies, we have completely missed the point, and we make ourselves even more vulnerable, because then all they have to do is say, oh, well, yeah, you know, you're right. We shouldn't have a corporation with a political agenda handling the voting machines. We'll have another corporation doing it. No corporation should be doing it. Let's go back to the phone lines. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And let's see, Ken in Michigan on the line. Hey, Ken, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. This is you answered some of the questions in with your last caller, but you were talking in terms of getting through the grieving process, but it's very difficult. I've compiled a short list I'd like to read about reasons to believe that the 2004 presidential election was, in fact, fixed.
Yeah, respectfully, Ken, I'd rather you didn't read anything, but if you want to just tell us what's on your mind, that's
fine
with me.
Well, basically, the Republicans were fighting a voter-verified paper trail, and this creates, at the very least, an appearance of impropriety, and at the very most, it creates the opportunity for them to fix the
yeah, absolutely. And as I said, I wrote about this in a piece that I'm assuming will be on commondreams.org today.
Okay.
And I've talked about it many times on the show.
The fact that the final results were totally at odds with the exit polls.
Particularly in the states with electronic voting machines. In those states that did not have electronic voting machines, there was less than 0.5% variation, whereas in the states with electronic voting machines, in some cases, there were 4% and 5% variations.
And there's a whole history to this.
Sure.
Nebraska and Georgia. I know in the past you've cast doubt on the results of the Cleveland election.
Yeah, I'm the guy that broke that story 2 years ago.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying that between Karl Rove being in charge, between the head of Diebold guaranteeing Ohio in advance, I happen to be working. I'm from Michigan, but I worked last weekend for ACT trying to get the vote out in Toledo. And, you know, so I have some interest in the Ohio situation, but what we've got essentially is all sorts of reasons. I mean, the inherent danger of privatizing the vote count, which you've alluded to, and the insistence on keeping the code secret.
Yeah, absolutely. And the bottom line answer to all of this is not to get caught up in the sideshow of Wally and Diebold, or of the Amundsen family and ESNS.
I'm not talking
all that
about
stuff.
The families. I agree with you completely.
It's to say get corporations out of the vote.
Thing, But what I'm saying is that I think there are many, many valid grounds to doubt the results of this election.
I agree with you.
And I just don't know how we. I mean, how can we? Should we have a? We can't have a congressional investigation.
Ken,
the Congress was stolen.
I know that's the problem. Ken, I absolutely agree with you. And if this little thread of hope is one that is going to be followed, it's going to be something that, I mean, it's already happening on the web, you know, in the blogosphere and whatnot. And it's going to have to be something that'll be picked up by an independent, relatively independent group like the FBI, or, you know, somebody called in yesterday and said, you know, the intelligence community hates George Bush. somehow somebody in the government, and there are still many, many good people in the government, is going to have to dig into this thing and turn it into a criminal matter. I suspect, frankly, that's not going to happen. I suspect, frankly, that they stole this fair and square, or they won it fair and square. It doesn't matter. It's over. I suspect. 95%, those would be the odds that I'd put on that. And we need to be, putting our efforts towards, number one, getting rid of corporations in our vote, and number two, getting the word out about the values that we hold, and trying to return America to some kind of sanity rather than, being the bully of the world. It's just very straightforward. Ken, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. James in Columbus, Ohio, on the line. Hey, James.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. What's up?
Okay, I agree with what people are saying about we got serious problems in our system of voting, but they're missing the big picture. In my opinion, we didn't lose this election at the polls. We lost this election a year or two ago when we wrote off the South, the Southeast and the Southwest. We never had an effective program to market our agenda.
Yeah, I mean, if there was no voter fraud and George Bush actually got 52% of the vote, let's just assume that for a moment for the purposes of discussion. Can you imagine if Al Gore had been president on 9/11 and for 9 months, after having been warned by the preceding president and national security advisor and vice president that bin Laden was coming to get America, had done absolutely nothing, and his vice president, Joe Lieberman, had refused to even have one single meeting of his counterterrorism task force? Can you imagine how from 9/11 until Tuesday of this week he would have been held accountable? I mean,
he would have been impeached.
They would have
ran out of town on the rail.
Exactly, and so I'm agreeing with you absolutely here, James. I'm totally with you. The Democrats did not fight this. At the convention. Let's have the convention all be upscale and nice. I'm right there with you. And again, that's ancient history too. We've got to move on from there as well. James, I appreciate the call. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272. How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America.
Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Rawl said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, a call to take back America by Tom Hartman, available in bookstores everywhere.
A university taps the deep waters of a nearby lake to keep its campus cool. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Cornell University is a major research institution that's located near Cayuga Lake, one of the Finger Lakes in upstate New York. Cornell uses a lot of energy for air conditioning during the summer, and a few engineers found a creative way to use Cayuga Lake to cool off the campus. Lanny Joyce is an engineer at Cornell's Utilities Department, and he helped develop the university's Lake Source Cooling Project. He says Cayuga Lake is so deep that only part of it warms up in the summer. Joyce says there's a layer of frigid water at the bottom of the lake all year long, and the university is using it to cool pipes that provide air conditioning to the campus.
We're saving 87% of the electricity of doing cooling the conventional way, which makes an annual electric use reduction in the neighborhood of $1.5 to $2 million a year. So it's a significant savings in electricity use and something that's a huge benefit to the global environment by not having to generate that electricity in some regional power plant.
The university performed environmental assessments before and after pipes were laid for the cooling system. Some people worried that the lake might warm up because the water that comes back from campus is warmer than when it was pumped out. Joyce says that's not an issue.
The amount of heat turns out in reality to be the equivalent of about 2 hours of additional sunlight over the course of a year.
Cornell's system went into operation 4 years ago. The city of Toronto recently built a modified version of the Cornell system, and it's now using water from the depths of Lake Ontario to cool 100 office buildings downtown. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
The Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Right-wing freak judges, $200 billion grudges. Yes, war's cooked up right from day one.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. It's Tom Hartman here with you. We've got I've got a whole bunch of calls on hold here, and we've only got about 3 minutes. I want to get to them fairly quickly. First of all, though, I just want to say the Center for American Progress, there is now a progressive think tank. And they're doing great work. AmericanProgress.org is their website. And they are openly asking for people for suggestions about what can we do to go forward. And the email address is PR, as in public relations, PR@AmericanProgress.org. And be sure and tell them that you heard about them on the Tom Hartman program, and just offer whatever suggestions you have. I know that they'd love to hear from you, and I think it would be a good thing. Bruce in Louisiana on the line. Hey, Bruce, what's on your mind?
Yeah, how you doing, Tom?
Great.
I know you only got a couple minutes, so I won't get into everything. But the main thing I'm concerned about is what the Democrats are going to do now. Because with all this concern about values, right-wing values, I'm afraid that there's a group in the party that's going to start pulling the party toward the right. In order to win elections.
Yeah, that group has been there all along. I mean, Bill Clinton started that with the Democratic Leadership Council.
And they're going to be renewed now.
And I don't think so.
Scrambled, for a year trying to get away from the term progressive or liberal.
Yeah,
we can't afford that.
Bruce, I don't think so. I think that what's going to happen now, and I'm doing everything I can to make it happen, is that let's return the Democratic Party to its original Jeffersonian principles and the principles of Franklin Roosevelt and make it once again the party of liberal democracy, to quote George Washington, the idea that, yes, we can have a middle class in the United States. It is an important thing, and I really think that that's going to happen. Bob in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind?
You are a breath of fresh air. I just got turned on to you a little bit ago, but I'm afraid you're going to have your hands full with George Bush and the idea he has a mantra now to go ahead with everything he wants to do.
Yeah, that's just fine, though, Bob. You know, there's an old saying, an old cowboy saying, give a man enough rope and he'll hang himself. I think George has got a whole mess of rope right now.
So, I hope you're right, sir.
Yeah, well, time will tell, of course, but we'll see. Let's see real quickly here if we can get Jerry in North Carolina. And, Jerry, we got about 20 seconds.
You know, talk about good news. There was a voting block that's about 95% of the American people, and that's people who are economically disadvantaged or economically insecure. They ought to be a think tank that's related to nothing but economic matters.
I absolutely agree with you, Jerry. I absolutely agree with you. I'm going to be writing a lot more about that. I'm going to be talking about that every day on the radio. And tell the Center of America for American Progress that. Send them an email at pr@americanprogress.org and let them know as well. It's a Tom Hartman program where smart people get their news.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Although 11 states voted to reject gay marriage on Tuesday, Ohio's amendment was the most extreme. The Ohio measure not only defines marriage as between a man and a woman, it also bans civil unions and denies any legal status to all unmarried couples and prohibits two unmarried people from jointly adopting a child. Private companies based in Ohio have already expressed concern that the measure will prevent them from offering domestic partner benefits, thereby making it harder for them to attract top-notch employees.
Not only did Bush win, but so did Walmart. California voters rejected a measure that would have required employers of 50 or more to provide health care to their employees. A recent study released by UC Berkeley showed that Walmart employees without health insurance were costing state taxpayers $86 million a year. Residents of Arizona also decided to make it a misdemeanor for state employees to fail to report violations of immigration law. Florida and Nevada voters passed referendums to raise their state's minimum wage to $6.15 per hour.
Thousands of Nigerians took to the streets in Lagos on Wednesday to support an upcoming general strike against fuel price hikes. Adams Osiomhole, president of the Nigeria Labor Congress, addressed the throng of supporters, saying that on November 16th, the people were going to begin the fight against poverty, unemployment, and dictatorship. The union is calling for a complete shutdown in the production of the fifth biggest source of oil for the United States. At the rally, Joseph Eva, a leader of a group that represents the Ijaw tribe in the Niger Delta, threatened that any oil workers seen at a flow station would be attacked or kidnapped. The union also announced its intention to specifically target the Royal Dutch and Shell Group.
Labor contract negotiations resumed today between auto manufacturer Volkswagen in Germany and its workers' union there. After a series of one-hour warning strikes protesting Volkswagen's calls for a wage freeze, the German metalworkers' union, IG Metall, finally agreed to a 28-month pay freeze in exchange for a $1,200 cash bonus and a guarantee that there would be no layoffs until 2011. Germany's biggest industrial union represents more than 100,000 employees at Volkswagen's Western German plants. The auto manufacturer plans to cut German labor costs by $2.6 billion over the next 6 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The U.S. Commerce Department released the first economic indicator after the election, reporting back-to-back declines in orders placed with U.S. factories, despite economists' prediction of an increase. Orders fell by 0.3% in August and 0.4% in September. That's over $1 billion per month. However, orders for computers and electronic equipment did increase, thanks to the U.S. military's ongoing occupation of Iraq and its demand for communications equipment.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Is there no uptick in the economy to bring us cheer? Wages are stagnant, jobs are down, stock prices are in the ditch, corporate profits are sliding. But wait, here it is. Just when you thought nothing was on the rise, here's an economic indicator soaring up, up, and away. It's the pay of CEOs. Even if a company's stock plummets, its workers are fired, and its accountants are under federal investigation for cooking the books and looting the pension fund, the boss hog is still wallowing in the big bucks, now taking an average of more than $11 million a year in personal pay. Well, the boss's oink, we deserve it. Besides, we're just being paid what the market will bear. It's how capitalism works, so get over it. But hold it right there, bucko. Doesn't capitalism now operate in a global market? Haven't you been telling us that you don't have to pay fair wages to American workers because you can roam the global labor market and get workers for, say, 13 cents an hour in China, or even import skilled software engineers from, say, India to work for a third of the pay of U.S. workers? Yes, you have. So here's my plan. Let's import CEOs. We can get them a whole lot cheaper from abroad and get good ones, too. Did you know that the top bosses of major corporations in Europe, Japan, Latin America, and elsewhere are delighted to do CEO work for only $1 million or $2 million a year? American corporate bosses now are hauling away about 500 times the pay of a typical worker in their corporations. Not exactly a plus for company morale. But the ethic in other countries is much more fair. Bosses in Mexico, for example, are paid only 45 times what the typical worker makes. In England, it's 25 times. In Japan, it's only 10 times. This is Jim Hightower saying, so come on, you boards of directors, start thinking out of the box and applying a little global competition to the executive suite. Isn't that how capitalism works?
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to the second hour of our program. Here on this 4th of November, Thursday, 504 days into the search for the traitor in the White House who brought down an entire CIA counterterrorism operation by outing Joe Wilson's wife. It's
See, there's stuff that's just like on the edge of breaking. Be interesting to see how this plays out. It's 809 days since the anthrax attack. Yeah, the old Bush administration, they've done a great job of looking into these intelligence failures, as it were. I got an email from a school, a school teacher, actually, representing her class. This was in response to our program on C-SPAN, which was week before last Friday, before, you know, a week and a half ago. And she said, you know, we're watching your show on C-SPAN. She says, I have a question from two of my junior high school students. Dear Mr. Hartman, we are two girls, blah, blah, blah. We believe that public schools should give gifted kids better education. They should not be pulled behind by other slower kids in the class. We both experienced this at previous schools and would like to know your opinion in the matter. Sincerely, Etienne and Rachel. And I said I'd answer it on the air, and this is an issue that I do want to talk about. We are spending in the United States an enormous amount of money to try and bring children who have learning disabilities and problems, and I've written seven books on this, on attention deficit disorder, up to, quote, average. In some areas, it's as much as 20 or 30% of the local school budget. We're spending 0.1% of federal funds on gifted kids. This is not to say we shouldn't be helping kids who are not gifted but who are below the norm. The problem that I see is that our model of education since the late 19th century has been an industrial age model of education, which is let's have all our kids turn into good robots for industry. Let's make everybody, quote, normal, end quote. And this is just wrong. We need to be aggressively supporting our gifted kids. Gifted kids program. I often say that the thing that saved my life was Sputnik. Sputnik went up in 1956. I was in the first grade. Eisenhower went nuts. Said, we got to do something. We got to raise a generation of scientists. They started these programs for gifted kids in schools all over the United States. I was fortunate enough to get sucked into one. And they were continuing. I mean, by the time I was 14, I got a summer scholarship to Michigan State University. And all of that went away with the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War wiped out the funding for gifted programs in the late 60s, early 70s, and it never came back. So we do need to bring this back, and we can't have our schools be assembly lines. And this, again, is one of the great failures, I think, of educational policy, federal educational policy and local educational policy, and another issue that we need to be talking about. We'll talk about it in more detail at some future point, this whole idea of our schools as assembly lines. But I did want to talk about that. There are a few other things on the list here today, but I know we've got a bunch of callers here on the line have been patiently waiting through the news. Let's take some of these calls. One, our telephone number, 1-866, toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. Bob in New York on the line. Hey, Bob, where in New York are you?
Well, actually, I live in New York, but right now I'm in the sad state of Kentucky right now. I'm a truck driver.
Uh-huh.
But I have a question, though, that I'm kind of concerned with. I actually have two, then I'll hang up and let you answer. One, the money that I have paid into Social Security, if it go privatized, what happens to that?
Okay, Bob, before you hang up and listen to the answer, by the way, if you're listening on Sirius, if you're a trucker, the second hour of my program is time-delayed on Sirius. You'll have to wait until tonight to hear it. So you may want to just stay on the line and listen to the answer.
Okay. What happens to that money that I have already paid into it if it goes privatized? And my second question is now that this... Bush has been reelected, unfortunately. Does that CIA report get suppressed totally, or are we eventually going to hear about that?
Yeah. Well, my guess is, with regard to your second answer first, that the CIA report is going to come out. I think that there are probably more people in the CIA who are furious with George Bush and this administration than who are happy with him, frankly. And, you know, he's put Porter Goss in there. He's put one of his partisan henchmen in to try and, you know, slap a few folks around. But bureaucracies tend to be incredibly tenacious. They outlast politicians. So I'm suspecting that a lot's going to be coming out over the next 6 months. The cracks are going to start becoming very, very obvious. With regard to your first question, Social Security was never set up, never intended to be, and should never have intended to be, an investment program for old age. People can invest for old age if they want. Social Security was set up on the insurance model. It's an insurance program. And the way that an insurance company works, by and large, is that the money, you know, if I have life insurance, for example, right now, and somebody dies, and I'm paying my premiums, and they pay off that guy who died, they're not paying with the money that he paid in. They're paying in with my money. They're paying in with my money. And so what happened to the money that you paid into Social Security up to this point is that it paid for the retirement benefits of people who were retiring, you know, over the last however many years you've been paying into it. I've been paying into Social Security for, you know, well over 30 years now.
I've been paying for well over 30 years, too.
Yeah. And all of that money, by and large, has been going to pay for the retirement benefits of other people. Now, there was a time, the very last year of the Clinton administration, when the Social Security, and actually there have been several times during those 30 years that you and I have been paying into it, when the Social Security administration ran a surplus. And I think if we're going to fiddle with it, that we should allow the Social Security Administration to invest that surplus in government bonds so it earns a small rate of interest. But the idea of putting it into the stock market or something like that is just absolutely insane. You know, it's just we can't, because then what you would have is you would have retirees who happen to be at the top of the stock market cycle doing okay, and retirees who are at the bottom of the stock market cycle, and it is cyclical, we all know that, would be wiped out. And but in the meantime, you know, the bankers and the brokers would get rich, and that's what they want. And that's why they're among the largest donors to the Bush campaign, and why Bush is talking about this stuff. But
do you think it'll go through?
I don't think so. I just don't think that Bush can ruin Social Security. I don't think that America will allow him to do it. I don't think, frankly, his own party will allow him to do it. He's going to try. See, this is one of the interesting things is that the cons, one of the great con jobs that the cons do, is they waive issues that they know they can't fulfill and they never will. They never intended to pass a constitutional amendment banning burning the flag back in George Bush Sr.'s administration. He knew that that was impossible. You're not going to call a constitutional convention. You're not going to have three-quarters of the states ratifying it. You're not going to have two-thirds of the House and Senate voting in favor of it, not only federally but in every state. It's just impossible. So why did they work so hard to put it on the ballot? Because they wanted to get people worked up. They have this long history, and the Democrats, to their credit, have never, to the best of my knowledge, done this in the modern era. The Democrats actually used to do this with racial issues before the 1960s, when the Democrats were the party of segregation, you know, and the Republicans weren't far behind, but the Democrats were overtly in the South the party of segregation, and Lyndon Johnson put an end to that and said, and he was advised by his advisors that, you know, that if he went in favor of integration and against segregation, the Democrats would lose the South forever. And he said, if that's the price we have to pay to do the right thing, I'm willing to pay it. And he did, and guess what happened? But the bottom line is that the Democrats haven't been willing to do this. The Republicans, though, have turned this into an art form. You know, let's have a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage. Let's privatize Social Security. Let's have a flat tax and do away with the IRS. They offer all these things that get people all excited because they sound good on the surface. Underneath, anybody who seriously thinks about them or understands the issues knows not only that they won't work, but B, in many cases, they're unconstitutional or illegal, C, they'll never pass, and D, what's really interesting, you read like the Wall Street Journal, you read the conservative publications, they themselves don't want them to pass because then they won't have the issue anymore.
I mean, call them on it then. Somebody should call them on it.
Well, see, that's the thing. That's where I say, you know, now George has got enough rope. You know, if for example, they were to make abortion illegal in the United States, you've got a whole lot of women in this country who are going to have a sudden wake-up call. If they were to make flag burning illegal and start throwing people in jail for exercising free speech rights, if they were to take the Social Security Trust Fund and trash it and privatize Social Security and have the whole thing go down in flames, I mean, Here it is. Here's their chance to really screw it up. And you know, the part of me that loves my country, you know, hopes that they won't and knows that they can't ultimately. But the part of me that is just horrified by the way that they've been playing games with the electorate all these years is thinking, you know, yeah, okay, he's got enough rope. Let's see him hang himself now. We'll see. Bob, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. Thanks for listening to us on Sirius there. Jason in Utah on the line. Hey, Jason, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I'm a Republican. I voted for Bush. But what I think the biggest shadow over your party for getting the gun had the same reputation as the Republicans have for gun rights, I think you couldn't lose an election.
Jason, you're breaking up. First of all, when you say your party, I'm not a Democrat, so I don't speak for the Democratic Party. In fact, I very often speak against them.
The show, so I didn't know.
Yeah, no, I'm just an old fashioned liberal, and there's a lot of conservatives in the Democratic Party that I have problems with, and so. But in any case, you made a point, and it got broken up, and I'd love to hear it.
I think that if you guys had the same, or if not you guys, but Democrats, the same reputation for gun control.
You're still breaking up, Jason. I think you said something about gun control, but I didn't get it. So I'm sorry. Try us again tomorrow, or try us, you know, when you're in a place where you've got a good solid cell phone, because unfortunately it was just breaking up. And as always, anybody who wants to call and disagree with me, we'll put you at the head of the line. At the head of the line. 1-866-889-8894. Francis in Eureka, California, on the line. Hey, Francis, welcome to the program.
Hello, Tom. Thank you. I heard yesterday you said you should maybe put it on the Martin Meyer tape.
Yes.
About life and journey. I was hoping that when you do get to it, if it could be in the first 2 hours, because we here at KGOE cannot get your third hour.
Yeah, I think what I'm going to have to do is do that next week, because what's happened is, all our lines have been continuously lit up. In fact, people started calling before the show started. I think there are so many people who just need to process this stuff and just want to talk it out that for a couple of days here, today and tomorrow anyway, we're just going to, you know, I do have a stack of stuff we are going to talk about, but we do need to let people just vent and get questions answered and things like that. And then on early next week, the Martin Meyer is not going to go away, and I promise it'll be in the first 2 hours.
Oh, thank you so much for that. Because my father and my uncle both lived through that until 1939. They were able to get out of Germany.
Yeah.
My grandfather thought he was too old to go refugeeing it around the world. He was 79.
Yeah.
When 1939, he didn't make it through that because they were all Jewish.
Oh, my.
And my father died when I was 21, so I didn't get to hear and learn all the steps, what the country went through.
Well, Martin Meyer wrote a really brilliant piece, and if you want to actually read it, if you go to buzzflash.com and click on their premiums for the Triumph of the Will, the Nazi movie made by Leni Riefenstahl, I wrote the review for that, and there's a hyperlink embedded in there to Martin Meyer's writings, and you can just click on it and read it online. But I'll get to it next week. We will get to that. I'm sorry.
2 hours. I'm real grateful.
Yeah, I'll do it. Thanks, Francis. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the true free speech zone.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is a small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S. is a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 24 minutes past the hour. 24 and a half. Time goes by. Just keeps on going by. Keeps on going by. The Bush administration announced Wednesday that it will run out of maneuvering room to manage the government's massive borrowing needs in 2 weeks, putting more pressure on Congress to raise the debt ceiling. And we're going to have to borrow more money from our grandchildren. They've been playing accounting tricks. We actually ran out of money some time ago. To quote the Associated Press, the Republican-controlled Congress put off dealing with the debt ceiling before adjourning in October, preferring not to force members to vote on the politically sensitive issue of adding to the nation's debt before the November elections. And a scheduled series of debt auctions next week will raise $51 billion. However, an auction of four-week Treasury bills due to be completed in November 18th will have to be postponed unless Congress acts before then. Government hit the current debt ceiling of $8.384 trillion back on October 14th. Your children and mine, deeply in debt. Ronald Reagan, the first president to take us over $1 trillion in debt, racked up about $2.5 trillion in debt with his borrow and spend policies, trying to make it look like it's good times. You know, passing big breaks, tax breaks and whatnot to his wealthy buddies, pouring money into his cronies in the defense industry. And then George W. Bush following in his stead, taking Bill Clinton's surplus and turning it into a huge deficit, running us massively. We're over $7 trillion in debt now. George W. Bush in 4 years ran up more debt than every president of the United States from George Washington till George W. Bush combined. Combined. And that includes all the ones who fought all those wars, and that's even if you denominate those dollars in if you adjust them for inflation. This is the most fiscally irresponsible and destructive administration in the history of the United States. And these chickens will come home to roost. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey Rick, how you doing?
How are you doing, Tom?
What's up?
Hey, did you hear the story about John Edwards' wife?
Which story is that?
That she's been diagnosed with breast cancer?
No, I didn't hear that.
Well, and it rains and pours, huh?
That's very sad news.
It is. Well, I wanted to talk about the situation as we go forward now, and I'm thinking that maybe a lot of what will happen or we can do as progressives might have to depend on things beyond our control, like you were talking about the deficit, and, of course, the dollar is following our trade deficit, jobs being outsourced. I really think that probably the only thing that could wake these folks up that seem to worry about whether they can keep their gun or their Bible is to really have a major depression. I'm not wishing that, but I don't see anything else that can wake people up to the fact that we have to change directions. And like you said, conservative economic policies, and we have a whole lot of history to back it up from this guy with the office now to all the Republicans that have had recessions, of course, and Herbert Hoover. But people never seem to learn. It seems like as long as they got enough food in their bellies, they start worrying about things like busing and affirmative action and welfare cheats, and until they actually don't know where their next meal is coming from, they really seem to think they can vote for Republicans and get away with it.
Yeah, well, it's every generation has to learn its own lessons, Rick.
I know that.
I got an email here from some guy named Richard. Maybe it was you. I don't think so, though. But
no, it wasn't me.
Okay. He says, by the by, I plan to vote for Nader. I say this country deserves two more years of Bush than the mother of all depressions. $500 billion in imports, $500 billion in deficits. It's adding up to a crash of unbelievable proportions, and China sure won't bail us out.
Oh,
I hope Bush's Bobsy twin daughters are learning Mandarin Chinese so they can marry well.
Well, isn't it true that Saudi Arabia and China are basically financing this debt?
Yeah, Saudi Arabia, China, Japan, European countries, but yeah, by and large.
None of those countries are really our friends, are they?
No. Our allies are too busy dealing with, our true allies are too busy dealing with their own problems. But China has sucked up an awful lot of this, and the reason why is because we've handed them the money,
sure,
in the form of all of our we've shut down our textile. We no longer make clothes in this country, so we gave that to China. We no longer make toys in this country. We gave that to China. And on the list goes. And so China now owns all this debt. They basically own us. And that bill will come due. Rick, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Although 11 states voted to reject gay marriage on Tuesday, Ohio's amendment was the most extreme. The Ohio measure not only defines marriage as between a man and a woman, it also bans civil unions and denies any legal status to all unmarried couples and prohibits two unmarried people from jointly adopting a child. Private companies based in Ohio have already expressed concern that the measure will prevent them from offering domestic partner benefits, thereby making it harder for them to attract top-notch employees.
Not only did Bush win, but so did Walmart. California voters rejected a measure that would have required employers of 50 or more to provide health care to their employees. A recent study released by UC Berkeley showed that Walmart employees without health insurance were costing state taxpayers $86 million a year. The residents of Arizona also decided to make it a misdemeanor for state employees to fail to report violations of immigration law. Florida and Nevada voters passed referendums to raise their state's minimum wage to $6.15 per hour.
Thousands of Nigerians took to the streets in Lagos on Wednesday to support an upcoming general strike against fuel price hikes. Adams Osiomhole, president of the Nigeria Labor Congress, addressed the throng of supporters, saying that on November 16th, the people are going to begin the fight against poverty, unemployment, and dictatorship. The union is calling for a complete shutdown in the production of the fifth biggest source of oil for the United States. At the rally, Joseph Eva, a leader of a group that represents the Idra tribe in the Niger Delta, threatened that any oil worker seen at a flow station would be attacked or kidnapped. The union also announced its intention to specifically target the Royal Dutch and Shell Group.
Labor contract negotiations resumed today between auto manufacturer Volkswagen in Germany and its workers' union there. After a series of one-hour warning strikes protesting Volkswagen's calls for a wage freeze, the German metalworkers' union, IG Metall, finally agreed to a 28-month pay freeze in exchange for a $1,200 cash bonus and a guarantee that there would be no layoffs until 2011. Germany's biggest industrial union represents more than 100,000 employees at Volkswagen's Western German plants. The auto manufacturer plans to cut German labor costs by $2.6 billion over the next 6 years. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The U.S. Commerce Department released the first economic indicator after the election, reporting back-to-back declines in orders placed with U.S. factories, despite economists' prediction of an increase. Orders fell by 0.3% in August and 0.4% in September. That's over $1 billion per month. However, orders for computers and electronic equipment did increase, thanks to the U.S. military's ongoing occupation of Iraq and its demand for communications equipment.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. 27 and a half minutes past the hour. Yeah, everybody's talking about this new, this new day. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program. I think I just said that, didn't I? Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, our erstwhile reporter in the field, one of many. Actually, you're kind of the big cheese there, though, Ellen. I'm very honored to have you on.
Bureau chief.
And
Bureau cheese.
I see. Okay.
Well, you know, I am currently at the press club where Ed Gillespie from the Republican Party is speaking. He was supposed to speak with Terry McAuliffe, but Terry didn't come today. Can't blame him.
You know, Ellen, whenever I say Ed Gillespie, I always preface it with former Enron lobbyist Ed Gillespie, because I think it's so important that that be part of his title.
You know, at the press club at these lunches, you're allowed to send questions up. So my question was, you know, how do you respond that God's guns and gays was the sort of watchword? And he launched into talking about the Federal Marriage Amendment and how values was important. The 22% of voters said that values made up their mind. It was a legitimate issue. And then at the end of being totally hostile, he said, they don't need to be divisive. We can agree to disagree. And he called the Democrats' position on this elitist.
These guys are so sick. I mean, this is the lust for raw power, Ellen, that you're seeing. It is hubris, and it's the old Texas saying: give a man enough rope, and he'll hang himself. These folks. Imperial hubris was right. Frankly, that doesn't worry me. I got to say.
It worries me. It really does. And it's interesting. Our military correspondent grew up in an evangelical home, and she said Bush's speech yesterday was laden with little words that the evangelicals would go for, and that even evangelicals who do not approve of the war in Iraq believe that if they voted for Bush, if they voted for Kerry, that they were going to go to hell.
Yeah, but
it was that simple.
I understand that, but the war for the heart and soul of the Republican Party has already begun, and you've got warring factions among the Christians who want their place at the table in the Republican Party. It's going to get very, very difficult for them now. They've made a deal with the devil or a series of them, actually. And they did it in part by promising things that can't be done, which is a classic and traditional American trick, except that now they have power. And, they've always been able to say, well, we'd like to have abortions illegal, or we'd like to have, guns, gods, and gays, be the primary issues. But we can't do it because those Democrats, they control the House or the Senate or Bill Clinton's in power. They can't say that now. And so they're either going to absolutely infuriate
these people who thought that they were being honest with them. Or they're actually going to pass some pieces of this legislation, and they're going to see blowback like they never even imagined.
Well, I hope you're right. It was interesting. I spoke with a friend today at Stephanie Hearthside, and she is, as you know, the representative from South Dakota, and she voted for the marriage amendment, and apparently, as a Democrat, lost quite a few friends over that. And said that she had to get reelected. Well, by doing that, she got Daschle out of office because there were apparently signs in several places in South Dakota saying that they were going to go for Thune and Herschel and Hearthside. And
that's what happened.
And so she really, they feel, sold out Tom Daschle for her own skin. And a lot of people think she may go to the Republican Party.
Amazing. Well, she won't be the first. She won't be the first. I mean, you know, it's in the game of politics, there are a few what traditionally been called statesmen. I'm not sure that there's a gender-neutral word for it yet. Statespersons. People who really and truly believe that there's a calling and that there's a higher, you know, that democracy is a great and extraordinary value, and unfortunately they're usually the minority. I think that they have been the majority during a few critical periods of time in our history, but this is not one of them at this moment. And then there are people who are just, you know, out for power and self-exaltation.
Well, let me
money.
Let me put you on the spot. What would you do for the Democratic Party at this point to have a win?
What I would do with the Democratic Party right now is I would clearly identify with very specific language the values, the traditional values that have defined the Democratic Party, that 30 years of right-wing think tanks and right-wing talk radio have caused America to have amnesia about. The value of a living wage. The idea that if you play by the rules and you work hard, you can put your kids through school, you can pay for your health care, you have a retirement. These are values issues. We need to reclaim the values word. The value that faith is an important and vital part of most people's lives, and therefore the people with guns have no place in that. And the government exercises its power by walking into your home with guns, and frankly, I don't want the power in the United States that has the sole authority to legally use the force of violence, including the force of deadly violence, to be enforcing religious laws in the United States. And we need to reclaim these values issues using our language. One of the biggest, in my opinion, is, for example, taxes are investments. Are we going to invest our tax money? We need to start using the word investment with the word tax constantly, so that we are investing our tax money in our roads, we're investing our tax money in our bridges, we're investing our tax money in our young people, we're investing our tax money in health care, we're investing our tax money in a nation that works. And anybody who tries to get out of participating in this investment and yet still wants to use the commons, they still want to use they still want the fire department to protect their buildings, they still want the police department to protect them, they still want to have a federal monetary system so that they can conduct business. Any of these sleazoids like Halliburton and all these other corporations that create these offshore corporations so that they don't have to pay any taxes, we need to start calling them what they are. They are unpatriotic. Unpatriotic dodgers, tax dodgers, as it were. We need to come up with a better phrase than that. But basically, they are anti-patriots. They are traitors to America. They're freeloaders. That's what they are. We need to be calling them freeloaders and reclaim the notion that taxes are investments, and that this is a great nation. We need to invest appropriately in it, and that all these guys like Grover Norquist who keep talking about tax relief are actually talking in code for their wanting to be freeloaders, while the rest of us end up paying the bill.
Grover threatened to sue me because I wrote an article about his connections with the Arabs.
Yeah, yeah. Grover, who told Mara Liasson at NPR that he didn't want to destroy American democracy in America. He just wanted to shrink it down to the size where he could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub. I mean, Grover, the great patriot. This is it. Well, anyhow, you've heard me rant enough, and I got a whole board full of calls here, Ellen. Any other news you want to share with us?
I mean, that is really, this afternoon, we're going to be hearing from Richard Lugar, who's actually been a critic of the Republican Party, even though he is a Republican, on foreign affairs and where we need to go.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting, by the way, that our inspector today, who in all probability is going to be the head of the Judiciary Committee, came out and said that if George Bush sends him any right-wing ideologues dedicated to overturning Roe v. Wade, he's going to make sure they don't get out of committee.
Very interesting.
A Republican, yeah. So the beat goes on. Ellen Ratner, our bureau cheese, the bureau chief for Talk Radio News Service. Thanks, Ellen, so much for calling.
Thank you.
Always great to hear from you. We'll talk to you tomorrow. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Let's take a few phone calls here. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Chris in California, is on the line. Hey, Chris, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. I don't think I get your show out here on the radio, but I did see you on C-SPAN twice. I saw, and the reason I'm calling is not because I saw you on the radio. It's because I saw you with what the hell's his name? One of the good conservatives.
Yeah,
you were on a panel of 10.
Yeah, at the Heritage Foundation.
It was sponsored by Talkers
Magazine.
This guy's got some clout, so I'm gonna call and you know maybe give him a little ammo. Not to say that you need ammo, because I think you know the issues very well. But I mean, I don't listen to your show. I've only listened while I'm, because I can't get your show.
Yeah.
I'm only listening while I'm on the phone. And, yeah. You know,
well, you can listen on the internet as well, by the way, if you're in an area of, that doesn't carry our program, or you can contact your local radio stations and encourage them to carry it. But,
okay.
You know, that's a whole other thing. But if you go
I watch C-SPAN a lot, so I get a lot of information from them.
Yeah.
You know, I watch Washington Journal every morning.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm sure that a lot of the people who call your show, they all seem to be sympathetic to your point of view.
Not all. I had a guy yesterday call up and yell at me that I was a panty-waisted liberal.
Oh, my.
It's interesting.
Well, I have several questions to ask, and
sure.
You know, some of them might give you ammo. But I mean, my first question that I wrote down, I said, what does a good liberal do now? Because it seems to me that the Western states, you know, other than Washington, Oregon, and California, are all, you know, they're all gun people and solid behind the Republicans regardless. Obviously, the southern states, that's true. The chance of regaining the Senate for the Democrats, to me, is like, that won't happen in my lifetime.
Well, don't bet on that. I mean, keep in mind, Richard Nixon won his second term with a much larger majority than George W. Bush did.
I understand all that, but I'm talking about the nature of the people who are in these states.
Yeah.
And you know, my second question is.
Well, let me just respond to that, Chris. The whole idea of red states and blue states, I think, is something that we need to shake out of our heads, because even in states that went for George Bush, there's still millions and millions of people in most cases, you know, a very, very it was just a very slim majority that went for Bush.
No, that's not true, though. I'm talking about Wyoming, Montana, you know, both the Dakotas.
Yeah.
You know,
you've still got 20, 30.
You know, the Republicans didn't do as well as they normally do. Utah. You know, you understand all.
Yeah, but you still have 20-30% in some of those states.
Essentially, all the South except for Florida is more than solid in the Republican.
Yeah. You know, Chris, I think that the biggest problem here is that we've had 30 years of right-wing talk radio and right-wing think tanks feeding into the news cycle and the news agenda, and conservatives defining the agenda using their language and framing issues in their context, and it's created an amnesia among the American people about what the real issues are that facing America.
I agree,
we need to be bringing those back up again.
Okay, well, let me just...
And I think we can reclaim those folks.
Yeah, well, I hope.
I really do, because I think that
my view is that there's so many irrationals amongst this group. You know, when people start talking about, I listen to C-SPAN every morning because I wake up early, and I hear people saying George Bush is a good moral man, and I said I know lots of wealthy people, and I have clients who are wealthy people, and I judge them not by what religion they are or anything like that, but by their deeds.
Yeah.
This man's deeds, if this is a good moral man, I live in a different world.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if he's a good moral man, but, you know, because he's an evangelical Christian, born-again Christian, well, I agree with him. I mean, he could blow up anybody, and we'd still say he was a good
evangelical man. What was your second point, Chris?
This is my final point. I'm sure you know about this, since you're from the Northeast. This is, well, I have a lot.
Well, I lived in Atlanta for 18 years as well.
No, but the bizarre part about the investigations in this country is that there's a tremendous amount of power vested in the Justice Department and the SEC.
Yeah.
But who's investigating all the corruption in this country? Elliot Spitzer.
I know.
Who's an attorney general in a state of New York.
Yep.
I mean, how can that be? What is the SEC under McDonough doing?
Well,
people are taking a nap?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Yeah, they are. I mean, in short form, that's it. The Bush administration has turned the hen house over to the foxes, and you've got Elliot Spitzer, who, you know, some say out of political motivation, most likely, still, God bless him, he's doing a good job, and he's out there, and we need more aggressive state AGs. Well, we had in California the guy who bounced the voting machines out of California. I think it was a good thing. Chris, thanks for the call. I got to move along. Great to hear from you, though. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's say Victoria Jones and Talk to Radio News Service is on the line. Hey, Victoria, we got a report from Ellen before. You have something to add?
Not really. I thought Bush's response in his press conference to the Arafat question was interesting. I got the impression he hadn't prepared anything.
Yeah, is the official news? I haven't been watching the news ticker here. Has Arafat died?
From what I've seen, I haven't been near a news thing for about 10 minutes. We don't know. We're hearing one thing, and then we're hearing another thing.
Yeah.
Now, this is how they do it, as you know, with kings and leaders sometimes. They want everyone to gather. They want to get their ducks in a row.
Right.
Maybe he's on life support, and there are going to be disputes about cutting him off. Or
yeah.
Maybe he is dead. You know, it's one of those things where the politics of the death are as big as the health and death of the death.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I don't know the answer to that.
So that's what's going on. Victoria, yeah. Thanks for the call. We'll get into this in more detail tomorrow. I've got a whole board full of calls here I want to get through.
You betcha.
I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Thank you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Lester in Ypsilanti, Michigan on the line. Hey, Lester, welcome to the show.
Yeah. I'm sure you've read Mein Kampf, right?
Actually, I have.
Okay. I've read it, and George Bush has read it. Now, when are we going to get up in the morning, face these, and say, "Hi, George"?
Well, I think a lot of America just did.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's all I want to
do. You know, I got to tell you, Lester, I've got one of these things that I keep meaning to publish on commondreams.org. I took actually Joe McPherson, a guy who was a producer of our program back 2 years ago, took a good chunk of Mein Kampf and replaced the word Jews with the word liberals. And you run the thing, and it reads like Ann Coulter. I mean, it's just absolutely spooky. And, you know, one of these days I'm going to have to publish that. John in Louisiana, in Treefort, Louisiana. Hey, John.
Hi, how are you doing?
First of all,
I am against gun prohibition. I am against partial birth abortion. I am against gay marriage. I'm against more federal government control. So I would ask you, in your opinion, what should a future Democratic candidate do to encourage me to vote for that candidate?
That's a good question. John, you want to stick around for a couple minutes and we'll talk about it? Okay,
right.
Hang on, because we got to take a break here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. The place where smart people get their news. Stick around, we'll be right back. Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard.
You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
This is a Workers Independent News Service feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. A recent report released by the Sierra Club, the United Steelworkers, SEIU, Unite Here, and others reveals clean energy policies would create at least 1 million new jobs in the United States.
Clean energy policies will create 1.4 million new jobs nationwide once the policies are implemented. These are policies for clean cars and clean energy.
Dan Becker, director of the Global Warming Program at the Sierra Club.
What the study did was it looked at what happens when we save energy. When you have a car that uses less gas, you're saving money on the gasoline. When you have refrigerators and light bulbs and other appliances that use less electricity, you're saving money on electricity. Rather than exporting that money to the Persian Gulf for oil or out of state to an electric utility, you get to spend that money on something else.
The report found that American households would save more than $1,000 annually by 2025. And Becker says increased consumer buying power helps all workers by creating jobs.
I think it became very clear that manufacturing jobs were being eroded not by environmental regulation in the United States, but by faulty trade agreements.
David Foster, District 11 Director for the United Steelworkers, sees a shift in the way union members view the environment.
We lost 3,500 steelworker jobs in the state of Minnesota. Every single one of them was lost because of trade agreements. Not a one of them was lost because of American environmental regulation.
In addition to increased jobs, Becker says clean energy policies would reduce global warming and protect the quality of our air, drinking water, and food.
No one knows better than workers that we need a clean environment. And the good news from this study is that we can have a clean environment and more jobs, that the two go hand in hand, and that's good for all of us.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 5 minutes before the hour, we're talking with John in Treefort, Louisiana. John, let's take your issues one at a time. Let's start out with partial birth abortion. The law of the land since Roe v. Wade has been that if a fetus is viable, that is, if it can survive outside the mother, then it's a crime, it's a felony to abort that fetus, except if the mother's life is in danger. So the question I would have put to you, and this is how I think this issue needs to be framed, and in fact, this was how John Kerry voted on it. The question I would ask you is, if your wife was pregnant, and she was in the seventh or eighth or ninth month of her pregnancy, and there was something horribly wrong with that fetus, something had gone so terribly wrong that if that fetus didn't get aborted, your wife would die, would you be in favor of a partial birth abortion or not?
Let's make sure what we're describing. We're describing pulling the baby out to a certain degree where the head's still left inside the mother. then
we're talking about killing
the back of the belt.
That's right.
We're talking about killing
the baby in a horrific way. That's absolutely right.
That's what we're talking about.
No, I would not do that. You'd rather have your wife die.
Now, let's see. How do you know that that's the case? See, that's less than 1% of all partial birth abortions. You're trying to put me into 1% category. I'm putting you into the 99% category. What are you going to do about it?
No, I'm saying that I agree with John Kerry's position.
Well, that's good for you. Okay, now convince me as the list. Okay, let's go to the next list. Give me something that I'm still, because I'm still going to vote against that. Now, give me something that I would want to vote for.
Well,
I'm against partial birth abortion. No way. So let's go to the next issue.
Okay, you're against partial birth abortion unless it involves the life of the mother.
No, I'm against partial birth abortion, period. Do we have that?
Even if your wife has to die. Okay, all right. So we got it. We're understanding your values here. You'd rather have your wife die than have her survive and have a fetus die.
You're in favor of 99% murders of unborn babies.
No, actually, I'm sorry, you've been listening to somebody's propaganda, sir.
There is no doctor
in America that will kill a viable fetus.
I'll give you that credit.
It's a crime.
Yes, that's me. Okay,
it's a crime. Okay. What's the next issue?
The next issue is gun prohibition.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, don't you favor disarming the police from your last statement? You don't want people coming in the house.
No, I am entirely in favor of an armed police force. What I said is I don't want the police who are enforcing the laws coming into my house enforcing religion.
They don't do that yet. We still have 10 amendments.
I mean, that's the problem. I mean, that's why the founders said keep religion out of the power of government. Government should not be enforcing the power of religion.
Okay, so we're not in disagreement with that,
No,
right?
we're not. We absolutely agree.
Okay.
One more. We got about 10 seconds here.
Well, then I would ask, if the Democratic solution is simply putting a more liberal candidate up there, you'll never take the White House, and you'll certainly never take the South. Thank God.
Okay. Well, John, thanks for your call. I'm sorry we're out of time. I just am not sure what you mean by the word liberal. That's the problem. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person?
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Although 11 states voted to reject gay marriage on Tuesday, Ohio's amendment was the most extreme. The Ohio measure not only defines marriage as between a man and a woman, it also bans civil unions and denies any legal status to all unmarried couples and prohibits two unmarried people from jointly adopting a child. Private companies based in Ohio have already expressed concern that the measure will prevent them from offering domestic partner benefits, thereby making it harder for them to attract top-notch employees.
Not only did Bush win, but so did Walmart. California voters rejected a measure that would have required employers of 50 or more to provide health care to their employees. A recent study released by UC Berkeley showed that Walmart employees without health insurance were costing state taxpayers $86 million a year. The residents of Arizona also decided to make it a misdemeanor for state employees to fail to report violations of immigration law. Florida and Nevada voters passed referendums to raise their state's minimum wage to $6.15 per hour.
Thousands of Nigerians took to the streets in Lagos on Wednesday to support an upcoming general strike against fuel price hikes. Adams Osiomhole, president of the Nigeria Labor Congress, addressed the throng of supporters, saying that on November 16th, the people are going to begin the fight against poverty, unemployment, and dictatorship. The union is calling for a complete shutdown in the production of the fifth biggest source of oil for the United States. At the rally, Joseph Eva, a leader of a group that represents the Idra tribe in the Niger Delta, threatened that any oil worker seen at a flow station would be attacked or kidnapped. The union also announced its intention to specifically target the Royal Dutch and Shell Group.
Labor contract negotiations resumed today between auto manufacturer Volkswagen in Germany and its workers' union there. After a series of one-hour warning strikes protesting Volkswagen's calls for a wage freeze, the German metalworkers' union, IG Metall, finally agreed to a 28-month pay freeze in exchange for a $1,200 cash bonus and a guarantee that there would be no layoffs until 2011. Germany's biggest industrial union represents more than 100,000 employees at Volkswagen's Western German plants. The auto manufacturer plans to cut German labor costs by $2.6 billion over the next 6 years. Here's today's Dow Bob report. The U.S. Commerce Department released the first economic indicator after the election, reporting back-to-back declines in orders placed with U.S. factories, despite economists' prediction of an increase. Orders fell by 0.3% in August and 0.4% in September. That's over $1 billion per month. However, orders for computers and electronic equipment did increase, thanks to the U.S. military's ongoing occupation of Iraq and its demand for communications equipment.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
At last, the golden age of television is upon us. But alas, this is not the golden age of TV quality, but literally the age of TV gold, when advertisers have become the programming. Leading the way is Disney's ABC Television Network, which has now opened its expanse of our public airwaves to complete domination by sponsors. I don't mean just the ads that sponsors run on its shows, or even the not-so-subtle placement of sponsors' products in the shows, but rather sponsors that become the featured character of the show. Sears has stepped out as the first of ABC's new advertising stars, putting itself forward as the centerpiece of the network's latest reality show called Extreme Makeover: Home Edition. Not that Sears has any actual dramatic talent, but it does have more than $1 million that it paid to ABC to write the corporation into the script of this six-part series portraying stories of home renovation. The actual actors will be using Sears tools in their work, adding Sears appliances to the renovated homes and decorating with Sears furniture. If that's too subtle for viewers, there'll also be Sears trucks delivering merchandise. Branded workers from Sears Home Improvement Centers will occasionally arrive on the scene, and the show's cast will make trips to Sears for supplies. The commercially crass rationale for this all-Sears show is that advertisers need a way to outfox you TV viewers who are using your clickers to zap past those annoying commercial breaks. So forget the ads. The sponsors will be the shows. To fabricate this great leap forward, ABC even has a senior vice president for integrated marketing and promotion. He assures us that while, quote, Sears plays a role in the personality of the show, ABC would never take it to the point where it would seem like a bunch of logos slapped in a show. This is Jim Hightower saying, see, there still are a few artistic standards in television.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, my friends. I think the discussion in our chat room right now, which you can get to, by the way, by going to TomHartman.com and click on live chat. It'll take you over to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, where you can drop in. I think that the discussion is a really good one. It's about the last caller to the last hour of the program, a fellow by the name of John in Louisiana. In fact, John, if you're still listening, you want to continue the conversation, I'd love it if you'd call back, 1-866-889-8894. And John started out going through the list of basically the Republican wedge issues, the areas that divide us rather than unite us, and starting with partial birth abortion. And what is so clear to me is that John, who said, the South will never go for a liberal, blah, 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 he's doing my team, your team stuff. But that he and I have far more in common than we have separate. Presumably, we both love our families. We both want our children to live in a good world. We both want clean air to breathe. We both want to know that our food is safe. We both want to know that if we get sick, we will have access to health care. We both want to know that our roads are safe places to drive. We both want to have some level of protection by our police, of us, and from our police abusing powers, both. In other words, we want the protection of the state, and we also want protection from the possibility of a state run amok. I think these are all American values. Just clear, classic, traditional American values. We want our kids to be well educated. I suspect we share the idea that even if somebody isn't born into a wealthy family, they should have an opportunity to go to college if they have the intellectual capacity to do it and the desire. Very straightforward stuff. The blue states and the red states have so much more in common than we have separate. Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals, ultimately have so much more in common than we have that separates us. And the tragedy of this last election cycle is that a group of political operatives led by Karl Rove and Tom DeLay decided that rather than talking about really what's best for America, that they would take the small, relatively small number of issues that divide us, or even those issues where people could be horribly confused, and focus on them like a laser beam, like an absolute laser beam, in order to separate us one from another for purely partisan purposes. Like partial birth abortion. I mean, even John Kerry said he's in favor of a ban on partial birth abortion unless that abortion has to be done so that the mother doesn't die. Well, in fact, that's been the law since Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade said basically any abortion after the second trimester, after the first 6 months, after viability, after the point at which a baby is viable, can survive outside the womb, is illegal. It's already illegal. But the cons turned this into this bizarre issue. I mean, there is not a doctor in America who would abort a viable fetus. And yet there is all this propaganda on the right about it. Find me one doctor, one case. There are none. I mean, they haven't been able to point to any. And yet they've managed to get people hysterical about this. And so it's like misinforming people, confusing them, when there are some real issues that are before us that we really should be having a national dialogue about. Real issues such as the fact that patriotism, democracy, nationalism, healthy nationalism, bring us together as a nation. Raw, unrestrained, absolutely uncontrolled capitalism has no nation, no loyalty to any person or any nation. I mean, here we have a situation where over 890,000 American high-tech workers were bumped out of jobs this year by immigrants coming in on H-1B or L-1 visas. Arianna Huffington says, the Bank of America ought not to have America in the name of its company any longer. Why? Well, one of America's largest banks eliminated 5,000 jobs while outsourcing 1,250 to India. It announced it's going to cut another 12,000 in the next 2 years. Affiliated Computer Service, this is from a commentary by Frosty Woolbridge. America's middle class now becomes the new working poor, from WashingtonDispatch.com. Affiliated Computer Services offers business processing technology. They outsourced 1,300 jobs to India in the past 3 years. They multiplied their profits by paying half the wage rate in a third world country. General Electric built its empire on American soil. However, it's known as the father of outsourcing. It's outsourced 12,000 jobs to India. People answering credit card inquiries. Gave its IT, technical assistance, to India. Three leading executives of GE made untold millions in salaries while American citizens stand in unemployment lines. Halliburton, formerly run by Dick Cheney, has 45 offshore subsidiaries in offshore tax havens. They're freeloaders. They're just simply freeloaders. They're people. They want to have. I mean, these are just mailboxes in the Bahamas. The actual company is here in the United States. They're doing business here. Their executives are here. They're spending the money here. They're bringing the money here. They want police protection. They want fire protection. They want education for their kids, but they don't want to pay for it. They're freeloaders. Halliburton is helping reconstruct Iraq with $73 million in equipment and services. Except, through KBR. This is another, one of the votes that came up in 2002, as I recall. Somebody tried to put a rider in one of these amendments that said that of these billions of dollars that are going to be spent in Iraq, rebuilding Iraq, that only American companies that actually are registered to do business in America, that is to say pay taxes in the United States, should be benefiting from American tax dollars, which would have disqualified Kellogg Brown and Root, the Halliburton division that's doing most of the work in Iraq. And surprise, surprise, the cons got that kicked out. The Bank of New York, run by Thomas, pioneering the job loss, Rini, in March 2003, sent 250 computer software jobs to Mumbai, or India, where it already employs 670. It's going to open a software processing center in the Philippines. AT&T, the company we used to call Ma Bell, you'd think it's an all-American company, right? They outsourced 500 customer service jobs to India in 2003, and in addition, another 3,000 before that date. Dell Computer. We recently bought a Dell Computer here. They're cheap. And I called their toll-free service line, and I get this guy with an Indian accent, and I said, where in India are you? And he's like, oh, I'm near Bangalore. Sprint cut 21,000 American jobs from 2001 to 2003, sent them to third world countries. The company that makes the Little Red Wagon, American Flyer, Little Red Wagon of our youth, they make them in China now. Maytag in Pennsylvania shut down its plant to open a factory in Mexico. This used to be against the law. You know, in 1776, there was cheap labor outside the United States. In 1800, there was cheap labor outside the United States. In 1850, there was cheap labor outside the United States. In 1870, there was cheap labor outside the United States. In 1900, there was cheap. In 1930, there was cheap labor. In 1950, there was cheap labor. There's always been cheap labor outside the United States. And the way that we maintained our standard of living, and the way that most countries do today, or many countries do today, now, there's increasingly countries are turning their sovereignty over to multinational corporations by joining the World Trade Organization, as we have done. But the way that companies maintained their sovereignty and maintained those jobs at home was by saying, okay, we're going to make blue jeans. We make blue jeans here, and there's a dollar's worth of labor in a pair of blue jeans. And if you want to make them in Malaysia, there'll only be 90 cents worth of labor in that, or 10 cents worth of labor in that pair of blue jeans. And so when you import those from Malaysia into the United States, you have to pay a 90 cent tariff. Tench Cox, back in 1787, got the first tariff passed in the United States for the protection of domestic industries. And conservative economic policies have abandoned that idea that there should be something American about the American economy. No, in their mind, it's all about multinational corporations. There are no nations anymore. It's a new world order, to quote George Herbert Walker Bush, of, by, and for multinational corporations. Forget about being a patriot. Forget about being an American, the cons would say to you, the Republicans in Congress. No, we're all members of this one world of, by, and for multinational corporations. And while they like to rattle the saber, the bugaboo of the United Nations, the United Nations, that's the one world thing. In the United Nations, at least as a nation, we have a vote. In fact, we have a veto. In the World Trade Organization and in NAFTA, we, a nation, can be sued by a corporation and frequently are. This is wrong. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Scott in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Tom. First time, long time. Well, not that long because I'm in Grand Rapids. But we're on for 3 hours. I'd urge everybody to listen to you, but I wish you were on for 3 hours here. Wanted to call and reply to what Eric Rudolph's brother, whoever that was, with the partial birth abortion. My wife is currently 8 weeks pregnant with our second child, and I would not hesitate for a second to save my wife's life by aborting that child if I had to.
And that's the horrible choice that people face in 100% of these cases. I mean, nobody at the eighth month of pregnancy is going to say, oh, gee, I think I'll have an abortion. And even if they did, they wouldn't find a doctor who would do it. It's always been that way.
That's right, and what scares me is they want to make it where I wouldn't be able to make that choice to save my wife's life, and that just scares me to death that my daughter would be without a mother and I'd be without a wife.
Yeah, it's the worst kind of demagoguery for the sleaziest of political motives, trying to divide America simply for partisan gain, and it's tragic. It's absolutely wrong, and it's tragic, Scott, and we all have to start speaking out about the immorality of those kinds of politics, the politics of division and fear that the Republicans have been playing. Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back.
It's time I breathe, because I can't get a breathe, doing things my way.
Interesting. It sounds like good old Tripper John. I mean, who knows? Anyway, 24 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here back with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Planned job cuts topped 100,000 for the second straight month in October. This, of course, it's early November. This information just now came out. In fact, it was released on Election Day. Job cuts as of 2000... If the announced job cuts come in around 86,920 over the next 2 months, then 2004 will be the fourth straight year in which job cuts in the United States exceed 1 million. 4 years in a row. Before Bush came into office, the highest job cut total in history, well, not in modern history, since the 40s, was 677,000. That was in 1998. Here we have a million jobs. This year we're going to lose a million last year, a million the year before. It is continuing. Conservative economic policies just, you know, playing themselves out the way they do. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Joel in New Cumberland, Pennsylvania. Pretty part of the country there, Joel. Hey, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
Great show. Brought up something interesting earlier on there, Tom, about how the church should not play a part in the state. And I can't agree more. One thing that kind of really hit home there was basically the way the past couple of days I was flipping through the channels and I saw on TV, you know, just about every evangelical channel basically was, you know, vote with your conscience, vote with your soul, heart, whatever.
Yeah.
And basically, what happened here is, in my eyes, Bush basically played this, you know, this card of, you know, vote with your heart, you know, brought up the whole abortion thing. It was a false issue.
Well, really, here's how it's playing out, Joel, and here's what's going on. It used to be that when we needed to get something done, for example, we needed to build a road. We said, what's the cheapest and most efficient way if we, the people, are going to build our road? And, you know, we would go out and we would put together our own road crew and we'd build a road. And so now you've got a situation where, for example, in Iraq, we need roads built. But instead of having the Army Corps of Engineers come in, or instead of, you know, we're going to hire a corporation to do that. The corporation, of course, skims some money off the top, and they use some of that money to hand back to Bill Frist and George Bush and these corporations. And so you've got the government money, our tax dollars, being recycled into special interests, in those cases, private corporations. Well, historically, when it came to caring for the poor, welfare programs, caring for those who are in need, education programs, birth control education, whatever, you know, you name it, the human services, we did that ourselves, and we didn't have middlemen in there. But George Bush, with his faith-based initiatives program, is taking the same pie of money and giving it to church organizations, including Reverend Moon, who's getting a big chunk of this stuff. And then they go out and provide the services, but of course they skim their piece off the top, and then they use that to encourage people to vote for Bush. And so
right.
Bush is, you know, he's just playing this old political game. He's doing the same thing with the churches that the Republicans have been doing for a century with corporations, and that is, you know, feeding them tax dollars in exchange for them feeding votes and political patronage back to them. It's the old boss Tweed thing. I mean, the Democrats did this in New York and in Detroit and in the big cities in the 30s just as well as the Republicans are doing it now.
Well, here's my question. Okay, since they're getting political money now, and, you know, the church likes to play such a big part in politics nowadays, why not start taxing them, you know?
Start taxing the churches, yeah.
Yeah.
it's a good one, Joel, and let me rant about that after we come back from the break. But it's an excellent question. I appreciate the call. We got to move along. 29 minutes past the hour, the tyranny of the clock here. It's the Tom Harbin radio program, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. Stuck in the matrix? We'll let you out.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Although 11 states voted to reject gay marriage on Tuesday, Ohio's amendment was the most extreme. The Ohio measure not only defines marriage as between a man and a woman, it also bans civil unions and denies any legal status to all unmarried couples and prohibits two unmarried people from jointly adopting a child. Private companies based in Ohio have already expressed concern that the measure will prevent them from offering domestic partner benefits, thereby making it harder for them to attract top-notch employees.
Not only did Bush win, but so did Walmart. California voters rejected a measure that would have required employers of 50 or more to provide health care to their employees. A recent study released by UC Berkeley showed that Walmart employees without health insurance were costing state taxpayers $86 million a year. The residents of Arizona also decided to make it a misdemeanor for state employees to fail to report violations of immigration law. Florida and Nevada voters passed referendums to raise their state's minimum wage to $6.15 per hour.
Thousands of Nigerians took to the streets in Lagos on Wednesday to support an upcoming general strike against fuel price hikes. Adams Oshiomhole, president of the Nigeria Labor Congress, addressed the throng of supporters, saying that on November 16th, the people are going to begin the fight against poverty, unemployment, and dictatorship. The union is calling for a complete shutdown in the production of the fifth biggest source of oil for the United States. At the rally, Joseph Eva, a leader of a group that represents the Ijaw tribe in the Niger Delta, threatened that any oil worker seen at a flow station would be attacked or kidnapped. The union also announced its intention to specifically target the Royal Dutch and Shell group.
Labor contract negotiations resumed today between auto manufacturer Volkswagen in Germany and its workers' union there. After a series of one-hour warning strikes protesting Volkswagen's calls for a wage freeze, the German metalworkers' union, IG Metall, finally agreed to a 28-month pay freeze in exchange for a $1,200 cash bonus and a guarantee that there would be no layoffs until 2011. Germany's biggest industrial union represents more than 100,000 employees at Volkswagen's Western German plants. The auto manufacturer plans to cut German labor costs by $2.6 billion over the next 6 years. Here's today's Dow Bob report. The U.S. Commerce Department released the first economic indicator after the election, reporting back-to-back declines in orders placed with U.S. factories, despite economists' prediction of an increase. Orders fell by 0.3% in August and 0.4% in September. That's over $1 billion per month. However, orders for computers and electronic equipment did increase, thanks to the U.S. military's ongoing occupation of Iraq and its demand for communications equipment.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Sean in Indianapolis raises an interesting question. Actually, before I get to that, though, I just want to make a plug, as it were. Two of the sponsors of this program who've really been there for us, Small Dog Electronics, have been sponsoring this program for over a year now. Great people. Any kind of technology needs you have, smalldog.com on the web. Or even better, call them at 1-800-511-MACS, 511-MAX, 1-800-511-MAX. And let them know you're listening to the Tom Hartman program. And if you have any technology needs, they can supply them. Small Dog Electronics. And the Organic Wine Company. And they've got some absolutely extraordinary specials on their wine products. And in particular, when I was out in California a couple of weeks ago, I had an opportunity to taste a wine that tastes like port. It's not called port because I think it has to be made in Portugal to be called port. But they have some just exceptional. This is a great dessert wine. They have some just exceptional wines, and some special deals right now on organic French wines. And these, of course, are wines that don't contain the pesticides that you get with your run-of-the-mill wines, grapes being one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products. You end up with, frankly, you know, wine can be pretty dangerous stuff, aside from the alcohol content, because of the pesticides. Well, if you're one of those persons who can deal with the alcohol or even thinks that it's a healthy thing, as some studies indicate, check out organic wine. 1-888-1-888-ECO-WINE, ECO-WINE. Now, I mentioned that in small way by way of segue into Sean's comment about should we be taxing churches. And I am of the opinion that we should not. And the reason why is because I believe that there are some things that get done in society that are such benefits to society that they should get a free pass. In other words, that we should be indirectly subsidizing them. And one of those is hospitals. I don't think that they should be allowed to be for-profit corporations, and I don't think that they should have to pay taxes. Another is, programs for abused kids, stuff like that, group homes, things like that. Another are schools, libraries. These are things that provide such a net service to our society that even though they're not run by the government, because they're providing a net positive service, we need to give them a free pass, in my opinion. And we all have agreed to. Now, how does religion fit into that? We have historically had this notion that religion can be a powerful positive or negative force in our society. And the founders were very, very clear about this. They had seen the negative side of it. They'd seen the Salem witch trials. They'd seen the theocracies that were being set up primarily in Massachusetts at the time. But they also, most of them, had seen the positive side of it, that is, personal mysticism, the personal experience of the extraordinary, of the divine, of what today, in today's parlance, would be called a personal relationship with God, or whatever you want to call that. A sense of something larger than us. And I'm not one of those who thinks that we have to have religion in order to make us moral. I think it's inherently in our nature to be moral. But I also think that there's this idea that there are some among us who separate themselves from society and become monks, become renunciants, follow that religious calling. And because the religious work that they're doing doesn't produce wealth, unlike Small Dog Electronics or the Organic Wine Company, which are for-profit ventures, they should be paying taxes, and they do. But because being a monk doesn't produce wealth, they shouldn't be in a situation where they have to pay property taxes or any taxes, frankly, on just to exist. See, the unfortunate reality is that right now in the United States, property taxes is the big one. The unfortunate reality is that you can't own land in the United States now. You can rent it from the government, but you can't own it. I don't own this house that I'm in. Everybody says I do, but the reality is that if I don't pay my property taxes for 2 or 3 years in a row, the government will come and take it away. So how can I claim that I own it? And so, those of us in the work world have to figure out a way to pay the property taxes or to pay, to keep on going on. And I think it's an okay thing. In fact, I think it's a healthy thing. I think it's a good thing if we as a society say, those who have decided to devote themselves to religion, ultimately, I believe, for the benefit of all of us, we're going to give them a free pass on that. Now, the flip side of that, though, is that in exchange for that, the deal we're going to make with them is stick to religion. If you're going to stick your nose into making profits, if you're going to start a store and sell things, then you're going to have to pay taxes on that revenue. And if you're going to get involved in politics, then we're not going to consider you religious any longer. And that's why back in 1814, President James Madison, I'm sorry, 1812, the first year of his presidency, President James Madison, his first veto was to veto a bill before Congress that would have given federal money to churches in the District of Columbia to care for the poor. And he said in his veto message, we cannot allow federal money to be given to churches any more than we must force churches to give money to the federal government. Because once we open that door, we can't close it. This would be it would set a very dangerous precedent. And for well over 150 years, that precedent stood. That we did not give money to churches to provide social functions. Government did it. Lyndon Johnson, really expanded that substantially with the Great Society, for example, in the 1960s. But now you've got an administration that says, no, It's fine if churches want to play politics. In fact, we'll get in bed with them and play politics with them and encourage them, as they did in this last election cycle so aggressively. And it's fine if government money is given to churches. And in my opinion, this is not only a crime against democracy, but ultimately it's a very, very dangerous thing for the churches themselves. This is not healthy for democracy. It's not healthy for religion. And so that's my answer to your question, Sean. No, I don't think churches should be taxed. And I think if they start playing politics, they should lose their tax-exempt status and be taxed, because they're not churches anymore. They are political action committees. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Sean in Indianapolis. Oh, pushed the wrong button. Sean in Indianapolis is on the line. Hey, Sean, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hey, I'm not the one that asked the question. It was the guy before me.
Okay.
Hey, I'd also like to say that another one of your sponsors that's really fantastic is 100fires.com.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. You're right. It was Scott in Grand Rapids who had asked that question.
Fantastic selection of books.
Okay, I'm sorry.
The owner is really great.
Yeah, 100fires.com. Yeah, Paul Cienfuegos runs that company.
They've got at least, I would say, at least 30,000-40,000 books on the site.
Yeah, I know. It's just marvelous. In fact, we occasionally run ads for them just as a freebie, or have in the past anyways. They're good people and they're doing good work.
Yeah, they're 100fires.com. Really they really are fantastic.
So what are you calling about, Sean?
First of all, I'd like to say to the John guy that called at the top of the hour, you know, if Rush Limbaugh were a liberal, he never would have been able to get his point across like he can on shows like your show and all the other talk shows that are progressive.
You mean he doesn't allow people to challenge him on the air?
Yeah, absolutely not. Yeah. You listen to Rush Limbaugh like I do, you know, every 2 hours a day. You know, just to keep, you know, I don't agree with most of what he says, but, you know, I still got to listen to him because I got to hear the other side of it.
Well, and he does pretty good radio, too. I mean, I think Rush Limbaugh does excellent radio. Let's give the devil his due.
Yeah, but my main comment, my main question is,
yeah.
Tom, how do you expect everything to keep from going downhill like it has been since the first Bush administration? If the Republicans have the White House, the Congress, the Senate, and the voting machines.
Yeah, well, I don't think we can keep it from going downhill, Sean, over the short term. I think things are going to get worse and worse and worse until Americans wake up, frankly. And
well,
I thought
we were awake.
Yeah, well, you know, apparently we're not awake enough. And I suspect that these midterm elections are going to be a shocker for a lot of people, the election in two years from now. And hopefully we'll have these electronic voting machines out of the way by then. They are an absolute felony against democracy, in my opinion. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tom in Wyoming, New York, on the line. Hey, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to talk about the partial birth abortion guy earlier.
Sure.
Now, he's saying he'd let his wife die just so he wouldn't do a partial birth abortion.
You know, Tom, I don't believe that he really would do that. I think
kills me, though.
He was just trying to make a point.
The baby's probably going to die anyway, and then he's going to let the wife die. What part of pro-life comes into that picture?
Yeah, see, that's the point. I mean, this poor guy, this John in Fort Tree, Louisiana, this poor guy has been led to believe, as have many good people of good intentions, honest people of good intentions, and I'm assuming that he's one of them. I really do. As I said, I think there's much more that unites us than divides us, have been led to believe that there are women who, in the seventh, eighth, ninth month of their pregnancies, just out of the blue, just for the heck of it, decide, you know, I think I'll just get rid of this baby. And they can go and they can find a doctor who will go along with that. And it just isn't the case. First of all, it's illegal. You know, ever since 1973, Roe v. Wade, they said, you know, any abortion after the second trimester, after the sixth month, is against the law, by and large. And unless the life of the mother is at stake. And the bill that was before Congress that John Kerry voted against banned partial birth abortion, even if the mother was going to die, if she didn't get an abortion. In other words, if the fetus is dying in the womb, the baby's going to die, and he's going to take the mother down with him. that it was still illegal. And
they're supporting the taking of life. Then.
That's right. And these Republicans voted for this. And there's this incredible photo of George Bush signing that law, you know, with Denny Hastert and Bill Frist and all these white men standing behind him with these great big grins on their faces, condemning perhaps 10 or 12. I mean, it's probably a dozen or so women a year in the entire United States have to get partial birth abortions. And it's in every single case, it's because the mother is going to die if it's not done. It's the only way that it can legally be done. And
you know,
and now some of these women are going to have to die. I mean, you know, they've their court appeals put the thing on hold. But and poor guys like John in Louisiana somehow believe this myth that's been sold to them in order to get them to vote for Republicans who actually are more interested in laying their money on John's hard-earned tax dollars and handing them over to their big corporate buddies than they are, you know, they don't really, you know, the whole abortion thing to them is just cynical stuff.
Oh, yeah, and I'm sure John's waving his flag today as they bomb Fallujah and killing all sorts of people there, too.
Yeah, yeah, it's... he's probably one of those 75% of Bush voters who believe that Iraq and Saddam Hussein were responsible for 9/11, and therefore, when they bomb Fallujah, they feel like they're getting revenge for the people who were killed here, and that's another tragedy that you've got. You know,
and it goes against the Bible.
Yeah, you've got these crass, craven politicians and news organizations like Faux News that go about promoting the idea that Iraq had something to do with 9/11 and had something to do with terrorism, and so you know, poor folks like John, who really, you know, he's probably working hard and doesn't have the time to really pay attention to the issues, and they get these kind of half-truths, and they stick. It's just a tragedy. Tom, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Jeff in Tulsa, Oklahoma, on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hello, Tom. I've never called anybody. I think your show is excellent.
Thank you.
One question I have for you, I heard the caller talking about politics and when it comes to religion, and one thing, I supported Bush, I voted for him, but, you know, I hear everyone talk about religion and against it, but yet I see Gore and all the Democrats run into all the black churches, and I mean, they are basically coming right out and saying they support the Democratic Party. Should they not lose their tax-exempt status?
Yeah, Noel, see, I absolutely agree with you that if somebody in a church is openly promoting a candidacy, that they should lose their tax-exempt status. Sure, whether it's black or white, whether it's Democrat or Republican, the laws should be applied equally.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Let's see, Tom in Coos Bay, Oregon on the line. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Oh, well, it's good to hear you. I've been reading you a long time. It's really great to hear you on the radio.
Well, thank you.
What I was wondering, I don't hear much mentioned about Oregon's vote-by-mail system. I believe we had a 79% turnout, and it seems to be squeaky clean, honest. I would think we could just do away with those computers altogether. They're unnecessary.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. There are so many alternatives to these electronic voting machines. Unfortunately, the electronic voting machines represent about a $3 billion revenue pile. And there's enough that can be skimmed off of that to hand off to politicians in various places that we got the Help America Vote Act in 2002.
I agree, but it's almost like there's a blackout on even talking about Oregon's system. We've been doing it now for quite a few years, and there really doesn't seem to be a problem. And as I say, we have 100% paper. You can count every ballot afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. It's an excellent point, Tom. And I wonder why there isn't more discussion of it in the press. I think part of the problem is that the mainstream media doesn't that the whole issue of is our system broke, our electoral system, has been one that people are afraid to go near. They're just, you know, it's radioactive. The mainstream media, they're afraid to go near it. They don't want to be criticized. They don't want to be called lefties or righties or conservatives, you know, whatevers. And I think that there's a lot of people in America in denial about the possibility of voter fraud, which I think is a very real possibility. Tom,
yeah,
thanks for the call. I appreciate it. And thanks for reminding me of that. I'll bring that up more often. I talk about how other countries do it. Why not talk about how Oregon is doing it? Good on you. 10 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
A university taps the deep waters of a nearby lake to keep its campus cool. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Cornell University is a major research institution that's located near Cayuga Lake, one of the Finger Lakes in upstate New York. Cornell uses a lot of energy for air conditioning during the summer, and a few engineers found a creative way to use Cayuga Lake to cool off the campus. Lanny Joyce is an engineer at Cornell's Utilities Department, and he helped develop the university's Lake Source Cooling Project. He says Cayuga Lake is so deep that only part of it warms up in the summer. Joyce says there's a layer of frigid water at the bottom of the lake all year long, and the university is using it to cool pipes that provide air conditioning to the campus.
We're saving 87% of the electricity of doing cooling the conventional way, which makes an annual electric use reduction in the neighborhood of $1.5 to $2 million a year. So it's a significant savings in electricity use and something that's a huge benefit to the global environment by not having to generate that electricity in some regional power plant.
The university performed environmental assessments before and after pipes were laid for the cooling system. Some people worried that the lake might warm up because the water that comes back from campus is warmer than when it was pumped out. Joyce says that's not an issue.
The amount of heat turns out in reality to be the equivalent of about 2 hours of additional sunlight over the course of a year.
Cornell's system went into operation 4 years ago. The city of Toronto recently built a modified version of the Cornell system, and it's now using water from the depths of Lake Ontario to cool 100 office buildings downtown. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
Good night, you moonlight ladies.
Rock and welcome back.
Baby Jane.
Yeah, 5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And David in Mount Sinai, New York on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. I just want to say that I feel that your inspiration. I just finished your book, What Would Jefferson Do? I thought it was great.
Thank you.
I do my best to accept what is.
Yeah.
One issue I'm really struggling with is the environmental issue. I think in the past, yes, America has overcome, you know, great challenges, but environmentally, I think there's a time scale that we're dealing with, you know, based on what I've learned, and I'm really struggling to, you know, to think that we do have hope when I see, you know, the stranglehold that, you know, corporations, you know, have on, you know, general consensus of thought that Americans
on the dialogue around the environment. You know, the Queen of England came out and said that America should change its behavior with regard to carbon dioxide emissions. I mean, the Queen of England never, ever speaks on policy issues. This was screaming headlines in Europe, or at least in the United Kingdom. And George Bush has rolled back environmental protections. In fact, I had it set for the show yesterday, and I never got to it. I'm not sure it's in my stack today, but we're out of time anyway. Robert Kennedy Jr. wrote a brilliant piece on this thing. It's just like every other issue here, David. We have to wake people up. We have to get out there and be active. We have to keep beating the drum, sharing the word, and change will happen. That's how it happens. When people give up, when people say, "Oh, we can't do anything,"
I'm not giving up, but I'm thinking about. I work with children. I'm thinking about these kids, and I, you know, I go into the homes and I hear what the parents have to say, and it's just regurgitation of what Rush Limbaugh says, or
yeah,
some of these other people.
It's the right wing talking points. Well, that's why it's so important that we have places like the Center for American Progress. Now we got a left wing think tank out there, and that we have programs like what I'm doing, what Air America is doing. I consider this part of, you know, my patriotic duty, and that you know, any of our listeners, you know, contact your local radio stations, and if we're on the air in your area, support the sponsors, and if we're not, contact your local radio stations and say you want to hear something other than right-wing talk radio, whether it's me or somebody else, doesn't matter. This is just an important thing, and we need to change the dialogue in America. I don't think that this right-wing takeover could have happened, David, frankly, if it hadn't been for 20 years of right-wing talk radio.
Right.
So it's time to change it. Dave, thanks for the call. We got a boogie. Thanks to Louise for producing our program, Ira for engineering it, and the folks in our chat room for showing up. Great to see you all. Thanks to you for listening. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Take care.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in...
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.